Be with us. Welcome to the March 17th edition of Bathrop Spears Broadsides. I'm your host, Robert Norris. And we have the squeaky mic here. I don't know if you can hear it where you are, but it's making me nervous. But hey, let's get some squeaky wheel action going in the community. We might be able to get some grease from the powers that be at the very least, and maybe some real change. The number to call in for this show is 427-3772. You're tuned to 96.3 FM, Free Radio Santa Cruz. I'm your host, Robert Norris, and for the next 3.5 hours, we'll be discussing issues of civil rights on the streets and in the suites, and mostly on the streets here in Santa Cruz. As the rain comes down, you can realize that If you're lucky enough to be indoors, there are numerous people, 1,000 to 2,000 in the city limits alone, who are not. They are outdoors. They are forbidden to put up a tent at any time against that rain. It is considered criminal behavior under the county's camping ordinance to put up a tent, not just at night from 11 to 8:30 in the morning when it is illegal to sleep and it is illegal to cover up with a blanket, but it's actually illegal 24 hours a day to set up a tent. So you might want to give the city council a call on that issue. They're the ones who keep this law in place. It's not a federal law. It's not a Bush policy from the Fuhrer Ridge. It's not a military martial law policy endorsed or enforced by the war against terrorism. No, it's the city council's own war against the homeless. It's been going on for about 25 years. The law was originally passed in 1978, and we have not been able to get a reasoned discussion on that law in terms of the comparing the needs of homeless people in this city with resources available with the concerns of the merchants and the businesses, and have that really weighed in a rational fashion by any city council. There have been several attempts to get that done, but it's all been essentially sidelined into a backroom process under former Mayor Catherine Byers, and then, of course, stonewalled under Mayors Sugar, Fitzmaurice, and now under Mayor Krohn, or should I call him Fuhrer Krohn, based upon his repressive actions at the last city council meeting, where he had one person arrested for making a gesture from the audience, a silent gesture. That person, of course, was me, and it was a brief Nazi salute in response to his repressing a person at the mic who wanted her 2 minutes to speak, Susan Zeman. There was time remaining in oral communications. He refused to give it to her and ordered her away from the mic on penalty of expulsion and potential arrest. When the same order was given to me for not even saying anything at the mic, but simply raising my hand in an expression of disapproval, saying, in essence, "You guys are acting like fascists," without actually using those words, I was ordered to leave the room, and then when I tried to continue to participate in the public meeting, as we all have a right to, I was arrested, taken off in handcuffs, held for 5.5 hours, and charged with disrupting a public assembly, and face now a year in jail and a $1,000 fine as a potential maximum for that crime. That happened last Tuesday at the 7 o'clock City Council meeting, and interestingly enough, that's on the Internet. The video of this whole thing, though community TV refused to do anything about it in terms of they refused to take any pictures of what actually happened in terms of my arrest. I think a few brief shots got out if you look at the community television tape of that city council, which is available from the city council clerk. You can see mostly they're kind of focusing on a pillar. Council was actually put into recess so that the city council would be spared the embarrassment of watching me get arrested on television and having the public actually see before its very eyes what went on, rather than simply have to take the Sentinel's word for it. Now, actually, you don't have to take the Sentinel's word for it. It is now online, and you should go to the I want to thank the Santa Cruz Independent Media site for putting it online, and that's at SantaCruz.indymedia, I-N-D-Y-M-E-D-I-A, and Santa Cruz is one word, SantaCruz.indymedia.org. And just look for the recent newswire, and the articles are labeled as S. Cruz video of Robert Norris incident, and then there's photos of the arrest. And you'll see it's just remarkable that Krohn would allow himself to be dictated to by Fitzmaurice and then manipulated by Kennedy. Fitzmaurice is the person, the council member to Mayor Krohn's right, who told him he wanted me arrested or expelled, at least, from the council chambers, instead of saying, "Well, if you want to make a motion of that effect, I think we should just pass on. Let's, and Mr. Norris, just don't do that again, please," or something like that, which, you know, would have been equally inappropriate in terms of the rights that we have at city council. And you can stand with your arm up in a fascist salute all day if you want. You can, until your arm gets tired, provided it doesn't disrupt the council meeting. You know, if you're standing in the front row blocking people's view, if you're directing some sort of hostile gaze at someone else in the audience, but you have a right to express dissident opinion at public meetings. I mean, that's just sort of a key part, not just of the Constitution, but even of the state legal structure, which is the Brown Act, which guarantees you the right to speak regardless of whether the city council likes what you say, provided you do so in the appropriate time, place, and manner. And the manner does not include the content of the speech. That's the point. And also Kennedy, who instead of letting the public see what happened, whispered quickly to Crone, recess the meeting, recess the meeting. And the meeting got recessed so that this was all done behind the backs of the community. Now, I have to say, I wasn't, as I mentioned at the last radio program, which I did on Thursday, which I do from 6 to 8 here on Free Radio, I wasn't terribly impressed with the response of the Peace Park minions who stood at the mic urging that the council spend $93,000 on a peace park or at least not impede the peace park. I actually was in support of their position, but not willing to stand up for the right of public dissent at city council and to stop the repressive process of their council members, which has been going on not just at this council, but for the last 2 years. If you've been following my show, you'll know that people have been threatened with arrest and removed from the chambers for using words like Führer, flunky, for trying to draw the attention, needing oral communications, our public comment on an item. They've moved items to the back of the agenda 6 or 7 hours down the road so that they don't have to be bothered with the person who is going to speak on the item. They had David Silva arrested and dragged off from the council meeting. This was for an alleged burn myself up threat. Well, it was a real burn myself up threat, which was in essence simply an expression of extreme frustration, and it was done so in a way where it happened right in the middle of a discussion. He didn't suddenly say he was going to burn himself up. He had made these comments days before. The police apparently didn't find it, or the council didn't find it particularly a matter of concern until the middle of the council meeting, when he was talking about another subject, a subject they didn't like, the Dolphin Lee subject, where the council is giving away all the affordable housing money to its favorite monopoly charity housing provider, its only housing provider, obviously favorite one, Mercy Housing California. And Silva was dragged off to a psych ward where he was promptly released. They're saying, you have no reason to hold you here. You're sane as we are. You're saner than we are, or you're saner than they are. And he's now suing the city for damages. That case, I think, is in depositions. I believe Becky Johnson, who was one of the witnesses, was deposed a week or two ago on that subject. This is a long, long train of abuses around the city council and attempts to discuss it with them privately to say, look, I've written them actually a total of 7 or 8 letters detailing the concerns I have about not just the repressive process that's used at city council to deal with people, but the failure to have an open process so there can be some real community input. There should, for example, be oral communications of a more substantial sort so that on items when public is usually allowed to speak after the staff gives a report, you should be able to speak after the council discusses the matter and makes changes in what's going to be done so that the public can reply to some of the council debate, maybe a shorter period, but, you know, an opportunity for real dialogue with the community. And or the city council could be responsive to hands raised in the council chambers. Instead, the council talks on endlessly itself, among itself, but refuses to afford the public even the minimal courtesy of, let's say, a right of reply. So, for example, if your name is used, if council member Sugar denounces you, as he has me on occasion by name, you don't get a right to walk up to the mic and reply. You used to under previous mayors, but not these people anymore. Crone has denied me the right to reply when my name was savaged by Scott Kennedy. And I'm not saying that I'm some sort of sensitive fellow, but I think you have to have the opportunity to set the record straight. And yes, I am a sensitive fellow, actually, but let's not get into that here. And publicly, you have to have a certain thickness of skin if you're going to be involved in this discussion and realize that a lot of the interaction is not a personal thing. I don't hate any of these council members personally. I say hello to them. We were amiable. I don't have much of a personal relationship with them at all. But I don't have any, you know, hostility toward them in their private lives. That's their affair. It's how they act publicly and politically that count and that matter to us. The fact that they don't introduce rent control, even though the rents are skyrocketing. The fact, as I said, that they give away all the affordable housing money to one housing provider behind closed doors with a board that meets in violation of the Brown Act. It's a bad situation. So anyway, you can take a look at all that that particular latest really outrageous bit of criminal buffoonery by Fuhrer Fitzmaurice. I mean, Fitzmaurice, Fuhrer Krohn. And I call him Fuhrer Krohn because that's how he's acting. He's acting. He didn't go to the city council and say, what should we do with this immediate situation? He just decided, took his orders from, I guess it's Fuhrer Fitzmaurice and sub-Fuhrer Krohn, I don't know. He just did what Fitzmaurice told him to do and had me evicted from the chambers. And when I wouldn't go, he had me arrested. Which is a nice way to get your critics out of the council and to impress on other people that you better keep your criticism rather muted, or you may find yourself in the same situation. It's not, it's not the most inviting environment to a council meeting. I don't have the rules of decorum here with me in the studio. They are, they're completely sort of the whimsical, arbitrary, and capricious rules of the city council about what can and can't be said. As I understand it, and I have yet to do some solid research on this personally, and I will hopefully be coming back on Thursday with more discussion based on intelligent research that I've actually done, there's a First Amendment project in Sacramento which has spoken to activist Thomas Levitt, who is concerned about this whole eviction for a salute saying, "You're a fascist," to Mayor Krohn, in essence, the silent Nazi salute indicating satirically what kind of fascists have we got on the city council. He was concerned about it. He contacted Sacramento and talked to some of the folks of the First Amendment Foundation, which knows a lot about the Brown Act, which is the act that requires city governments to respect the rights of the public. And apparently he was told that council can make up whatever rules they want. There's still a First Amendment. That's really the key issue. And while you can't disrupt the process of the council, you certainly are not subject to a lot of rules that are arbitrary and subjective about what they think you can and can't do at the council. You shall not speak in contemptuous terms. You shall not speak in harsh terms. That's all very well as a potential guideline, but it cannot be a basis for excluding someone from the council chambers. If you want to join this conversation, and we're talking about city council's exclusion of people from council, specifically me last week, the phone number to call is 427-3772, 427-3772, or if you're alphabetically inclined, 427-FRSC for Free Radio Santa Cruz. Free Radio is the radio station that you are tuned to, and don't you forget it. When I was up north at the homeless summit, kind of a mini homeless summit, we're planning our own, by the way, May 3rd and 4th here in Santa Cruz, so mark it on your calendar, May 3rd and 4th, Friday and Saturday, there was a sort of a quick summit called in response to the supervisor's gruesome Newsom, Gavin Newsom, who is trying to cut back homeless people's visibility by making it illegal for them to panhandle in many circumstances and cutting back the money that they get, saying, "Oh, instead we'll shove you into a shelter and give you $50. And there were some other supervisors who said, "No, let's talk about the real issues underlying homelessness, not just simply fashionable Fuhrer Giuliani type moves." And I use the word Fuhrer quite consciously. That's what Giuliani did. He acted in a fascist manner in New York City for year after year towards the homeless, towards artists, towards poor people, towards any critics of the police department. We don't just want to have the way that Hitler cleaned up the homeless in Germany. He went after the homeless, the Jews, and the mentally disabled first, of course, and those were put in concentration camps. And I guess it was the mentally ill that were gassed first. It was called mercy killing or some such thing. And I'm not suggesting that there is a gassing program going on, but the process of repressing homeless and poor people and young people and counterculture people and people who are dissidents, particularly in a, quote, war climate. It looks like a war climate at city council to me, mirroring the national war climate. Our council can't even get a resolution against the war being discussed on the floor of the council. And as the bombing continues and the war expansion plans continue, nothing is being done by this council. But in any case, we have a situation at council where in San Francisco, similarly, this Board of Supervisors, which acts as their city council, held a summit, some of them, to kind of counter the repressive policies being proposed by other supervisors. And I went up there briefly, and I've talked about that on the show. That was a couple weeks ago. And I ran into a singer up there, a woman named Barbara Anderson. And here she is. That was Barbara Anderson and Naked Truth, Evening's Bed, a comp CD given to me by blues singer Barbara Anderson, who was at this homeless summit in San Francisco. Maybe we can get her to come and do some singing on Friday, May 3rd at the homeless summit in Santa Cruz. That would be great. This is Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM, and I'm Robert Norris. And last week, my producer just ragged me over the coals, and then she dragged me over the coals, and she was concerned that the tape-recorded segment I played of the arrest at City Council was constantly interrupted by my tiresome analysis. And what I'm going to do now is... I don't actually have the same tape in the studio. It's a sort of an interesting shot-in-the-dark situation with me and tapes. I grab what I can when I get to this program, and I'm probably one of the least well-organized people on Free Radio. But I do have a tape that I didn't play for you last show, which has to do with this arrest at City Council. And this is a tape that I initially made, which happened a bit before the arrest, immediately before the arrest, and then Becky Johnson, who was videotaping this, shifted to an audio tape and was also audio taping this subsequent events around the arrest, where I was in a squad car and she was just talking with Officer Brandt, who was the individual who took me to the squad car. And I'm going to actually play this through with very little interruption. I will try to restrain myself, though I'm always eager to explain, as you listeners know. This, again, is a tape that starts about 7:45 or 7:50 on Tuesday night at City Council. And we join the City Council as the mayor stops Susan Zeman from talking. And as I said, Susan Zeman is a peace activist who can be found every Friday at the Ocean and Water Street lifting a sign between, I think, 5 and 6:30, encouraging people to end the war. I wish there were more of her. And she was going to talk about the Peace Park, which many people in line have been discussing. I was the individual behind her. I was the speaker behind her. And Tomasi, the man whose voice you're going to hear in a moment, kind of the irascible man who lives in his van, was being thrown out of City Council for having raised his voice. He was speaking from the floor. He wasn't at the mic. He was speaking in a sort of an obstreperous and angry manner, and he was speaking without any indication he would stop speaking. So there might have been some justification for excluding him, or at least telling him to wait his turn, but of course he was being denied access to oral communications too. He was actually the third person who was not being allowed to speak. There were three of us who wanted our 2 minutes to speak. And now you'll hear you'll hear that tape that begins there. Some of it's not terribly audible, so I may break in, but I'll try to restrain myself. City Council, March 12th.
I will see you on the street, pal. You too, McGee.
I'm going to have to ask you to leave if you don't stop working my phone.
Three troubles, I don't see.
Thanks very much. The email will be accepted during the council meeting. The address is deepmorning@ci.santa.ca.us. This address is the same thing as council during meetings only.
Mayor, point of order. Mr. North made an obvious salute.
The response to the cutting off of oral communication, an act of free speech.
It's
a Brown Act. I have the right to participate here, and I intend to remain.
You're out of order, sir.
No offense, ma'am.
It is 7:50.
Yeah, you can't remove you from the chambers for doing that. That's ridiculous.
That's right.
Yeah, it's supposed to be.
What
than 30 minutes.
No, they cut off oral communication before 30 minutes was over because they engage in dialogue with one of the speakers.
Cutting people back to, 2 minutes per speaker. I mean, there's no precedent for that. Removing the ability for the public to participate in these meetings, cutting it down. This is the council that says that they're going to improve access for the public at these meetings. This is not a very good example. So what do you want to talk about?
That lady, if I could get what she wanted to say, would that be okay? No?
So we're outside with Susan. And Susan, what did you want to say?
Yes,
it shouldn't matter who you
are. Okay, well, that woman was talking about how a peace park should not be in the heart of the city because that's a place where people ought to be able to contemplate peace. And I think it's important for us to exactly have it in the heart of the city because in this culture, we don't contemplate peace very often. We tend to avert our eyes and pretend like we don't see it. And so I think it's sort of crucial for that to exactly be right there in the hub of the city, right there in the heart of Santa Cruz City.
Now, you stood up at the mic and you simply wanted to say that.
Yeah.
You stood there for a while until you were threatened with arrest, first ignored by Mayor Crown.
Yeah, can you believe that?
I didn't. I saw it. In fact, can you believe that he threatened to arrest me for doing that? It's hard to believe.
The other thing that I was going to mention is that are you going to go in? That's okay. I'm going to take off. Bye.
Okay.
So Leslie did not make a notation when oral communication started and acknowledges that she simply added up the number of speakers, gave them 2 minutes each plus the first speaker. Give me the message in here, Sergeant Baker.
He asked me to request that you leave and that he's barring you from the chambers and wants you to do so rapidly.
I appreciate your passing on that message.
I'm just trying to...
No, I understand. I'm not... Right.
I guess my next question is, do you intend to comply with that?
I don't know. I might. I'm thinking about it. I've got to talk to the mayor. Do you intend to have me arrested for making an act of free speech in here? Is that what you're going to do?
You're not invited back in.
Well, this is a public meeting. I don't have to be invited back in, Chris. Unfortunately, I've got to get somebody to drive my car up. You have a driver's license, right?
Yeah.
Because I'm going to need someone to drive my car.
Okay, where's your car at?
My car, actually.
Okay, where's it at?
It's parked across the street in the Civic Auditorium parking lot.
Okay, who are you taking to Becky's? Take it to Becky's or what?
Come over here. Let's figure this out. Becky, where can you park my car? Because I can't. I've got a parking spot. Up the street from your house?
Yep. Okay, Robert. He wants, at this point, the mayor's requested that I have you leave. If you fail to leave, then you'll be arrested.
Under what charge?
I would assume trespassing. I would get direction from the city attorney to make sure. But
okay, my belief is that I have a right to be here under the Brown Act. I'm not engaging in any disruptive behavior.
And I don't know the answer to that, Robert. All I'm saying is that at this point I'm asking you to leave. If you fail to comply, I don't have a lot of choice but to arrest you. And given the fact that there's a reasonable likelihood that this would continue, I would do so as an in-custody arrest, a misdemeanor arrest.
You can do that, although I suspect that once you arrest me, the point will have been made, and I probably would leave at that point.
Of course. I'm asking you right now, do you want to leave or be arrested?
I simply want to participate in the public meeting by listening to the meeting. That's what I want to do.
Do you intend to leave at this point?
Not at this moment.
Okay. Then I'm going to ask you to place your hands around your back, please.
Let me get this paper.
Okay, everybody. No problem. I'm just going to ask you to place your hands around your back, please. Thank you.
Being arrested for attending a public meeting. This meeting is still in recess, and I'm being arrested for being in here. I want this point made.
Mr. Norris, could you please place your hands behind your back?
I'm being arrested because I made a silent motion protesting Susan Zeman's exclusion from oral communication before oral communication had finished.
Mr. Norris.
Yes?
Thank you.
out of the box, so keep the tin for you. Thank you. Give me the charge a second. I want to.
All right, the City Council meeting has begun again, and Robert is being put into the police car for Sergeant Baker has checked with City Attorney Barasoni, and perhaps they're conferring about what the
at City Council.
Was it for the Nazi salute, or do you have any idea, Officer Brandt, why he's arrested?
You have to ask him.
He's asking you what he's being arrested for. He says he told you already.
No. Tell him to tell you right now. What am I being arrested for?
He said he won't do that.
I asked you, what am I being arrested for? Officer Grant, I'm requesting that information. What am I being arrested for?
I told you once.
What?
I will not tell you again. I do not have to keep repeating myself.
What am I being arrested for? Officer Brandon, is this a legal arrest? If I'm not being told what I'm being arrested for, I don't want speculation. I want to know what I'm charged with. What am I being charged with? Officer Brandt, what am I being charged with?
I need a section here in just a couple of minutes.
Disrupting a public meeting.
Thank you.
Is that clear enough to you?
Thank you.
Do you need me to repeat it again?
I think you're just
that's the first time you've said that to the officer.
Kind of well before you put them in the cuffs and took him into custody.
Did I put him in the cuffs?
I think it was Sergeant Baker took him in the cuffs, and then you put him in the police car, where he was of course not exactly at liberty to go, but he didn't know what his charge was until just now.
Did I?
Sergeant Baker put him in the cuffs, and I think I have that on the tape.
Thank you.
But you were supposed to inform him of what he charged he was being arrested for, and you didn't. I mean, not until just now. You took...
I didn't arrest him.
Oh, I see. So just because you put him in the car, you're just, just a little, transporting, and hence have no responsibility for whether this is done legally or not. Thank you, Officer Brandt.
Oh, you're more than welcome, ma'am. Anytime I can be of assistance to you.
Okay, now Officer Brandt is putting a seatbelt around Robert. After all, safety first. We hear that the charges, that they finally figured out that the charges are disrupting a meeting. Now, whether that was for the silent Nazi salute that Councilmember Fitzmaurice was so concerned about, or perhaps his refusing to leave a meeting after that, and the decision by a council member, or by Mayor Crone, to... call for a 5-minute recess at that point. Maybe that would be considered the disruption. Anyway, Robert is in custody here, and it is March 12th. It's approximately 8 p.m. And I guess he's awaiting being transported out here outside City Hall. And waiting, I'm not sure what for. Perhaps for Sergeant Baker to come out and sign the citation, since Officer Brandt is not the arresting officer. He's merely the transporting officer. And therefore, doesn't have to have any knowledge or anything about conditions for arresting someone, since he's only merely the transporting officer. Or so he tells us. Okay, it's been about 5 minutes.
I'm riding my bicycle on the street, so I just said, is there any stories about how dangerous it is? You don't have any lights on your bicycle.
Yeah, they just fill up.
Then you can't ride it on the streets.
Okay, we'll get one of those bogus tickets that they're writing bike drivers all the time. I would hate to see that.
I didn't hear what you said.
I said I would hate to see him get one of those bogus tickets that they're writing for bicycle riders all the time.
Bogus ticket? Somewhere in the vehicle code, I seem to see that it says, not on the bicycle, it needs to be on the bicycle. It says they have to have lights on the front of their bicycle and a reflector to the rear. If you look up the vehicle code, you'll find that's law in the state of California, believe it or not.
I believe in bike safety.
Well,
in that.
Why do you say it's a bogus ticket then?
Well, because I've seen a lot of bike riders get tickets here that I think were in error. And I think that the police department...
Most of the things we do are in error.
Well, no, you do, the ones that I speak about I do think are in error. And
tell me I'm doing that.
I wouldn't say that, but I'm not thrilled with your performance, Officer Brand, either. I think that you have a rather brusque attitude towards public.
He made me the way I am.
And but the police department hired you, and you're representing the city, and you have certain standards that you're supposed to follow. I'm sure they have no problem with how you are. I have a problem with how you treat people.
Well,
you know, I mean, I heard a story about you earlier today that's very disturbing.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, some sort of verbal threat that you made to a young man.
Yeah. Well, if we talk about something that's meant if I wanted to,
all those bicycle grants and everything, but they're not to, like, give people headlights or helmets or anything, something useful for bike safety. They're just to hire more police officers to to write tickets for bicycle riders.
Did I write a ticket?
You didn't. I didn't say you wrote a ticket.
Isn't that amazing?
In fact, actually, by warning him, you prevented, if he just continued on without your saying something, you might have written him a ticket then, you know, without the warning. I mean, I think a warning is a good thing to do.
Unfortunately, they don't take any notes.
Baker has come out, and he's directed Brandt to go, I'm not quite sure, he says, you go this way, I'll go that way. So there they go, off to wherever they're going. And he didn't say to the jail or the police station. In fact, he's not even headed in that direction, so I'm not really quite sure what's going on here.
And that was activist Becky Johnson giving her unbowed commentary outside city council chambers as she stood next to a squad car of Officer Brandt's. I was in the back seat. It was parked next to the Civic Auditorium across the street from the City Council. And as promised, I actually let that tape run uninterrupted. I would like to hear some applause from all you listeners out there. There are numerous points, however, at which I wanted to interrupt in order to clarify some things, but I'll try and make those clarifications now. Baker's arrest of me at City Council happened during the recess. And, of course, the recess was taken so that the public, this is my view, wouldn't see the arrest, so that they wouldn't see this sort of naked iron fist underneath the velvet glove of pseudo-progressivism that this town has. But the point is that to arrest me during a recess required a specific charge. Now, the police themselves can, if they see a crime or they're told that a crime was in progress, they can choose to say, yes, a crime has been committed and make an arrest. Baker chose not to do that. This was a citizen's arrest from Mayor Chris Krohn, and a citizen's arrest is a somewhat different process. A citizen has to swear out a complaint that she or he feels a crime was in progress, and then the liability is with the citizen, and the police officer is obliged to take the individual into custody, that is to say, to write him or her a citation, that's what's meant by custody, and then to release him or her if the police officer wants, unless he feels there's some reason to hold that person. At the point of my arrest, you heard Baker saying, I think you're being arrested for trespass. Baker had no specific complaint from the mayor. So it was an illegal arrest from that point. There was nothing signed that indicated a specific code section under which I was arrested. I was simply arrested on a vague, he's doing something we don't want him to do, get him out of here. That's not the basis for an arrest. There has to be a crime. Now, they found a crime about 5 or 10 minutes later called disrupting an assembly, and that may be the crime under which I'm charged, but they didn't have it when they arrested me, and therefore it was an illegal arrest, just from that point alone. There was no charge. It was simply done in deference to the mayor. Can't do something in deference to the mayor. This is America, where every citizen to some extent has to stand on an equal footing in the light of the Constitution. Of course, in Santa Cruz, that's never been the case, and in most American cities, that's not the case. But we have to try to make that the case, and that's what I was trying to do there by refusing to leave a meeting, which I had a perfect right to be at, even though Councilmember Fitzmaurice didn't want me at that meeting because he didn't like seeing my arm go up indicating to him, I think you're a fascist, Fitzmaurice. Oh, actually, it wasn't directed toward Fitzmaurice. It was directed toward the entire council and toward specifically Mayor Crone and his decision not to allow people to speak. For the last, actually it would be a total of 6 minutes if he had allowed Michael Tomasi, myself, and Susan Zeman to finish out the time. And I'm going to be getting the final action agenda and see just how long that meeting eventually took. I don't think it took that long. I don't think there were that many things on the agenda that he couldn't have allowed that, particularly given his commitment to increased public access. He made a content-based decision. He didn't like us. He didn't like the speakers. He made a rigid decision that was ill-advised, and then when people protested it in the only brief way they could, which wasn't disruptive, one, Susan Zeman went to the mic and protested cutting off of communication and discussion. It was just another in a long train of abuses that the city council is engaged in. And again, it was, if you look at the videotape, and the videotape is on the internet, it's been posted at santacruz.indymedia.org. Again, Santa Cruz, one word, small letters, dot indymedia, small letters, indymedia.org. You can see it, although I haven't got very good real video when I download it. It's a very brief, and then I turn back to Susan Zeman and talk to her. I mean, it was simply an expression of... of sentiment that was political sentiment about what he was doing, and it's completely appropriate and there's no basis. Crone, based on orders from Fuhrer Fitzmaurice, or suggestion from Fuhrer Fitzmaurice, if you will, he disrupted his own meeting, recessed his own meeting, created an arrest, created a lawsuit. And why would he do this? Well, I presume he did it to please Fitzmaurice. He did it to please the rest, other council members that he feel wanted to get rid of me, or perhaps because he had his own dissatisfaction with me and the way I was expressed myself in other meetings. I've been very critical of Crone in the last few months for, in the middle of winter, failing to do anything about the sleeping ban, about shelter, about civil rights for the homeless. You've heard a lot of blather about changes in the camping ordinance, but none of these have had anything to do with expanding real civil rights for the general homeless population. That's something he has declined to even discuss, even though if it were brought up, as I've said many a time on this show, he would have the votes to change the sleeping sections of the camping ordinance. Other things that comments about that tape you just heard, Officer Brandt, who is the officer, he's the oldest officer on the force, he's 57, he's the fellow, tall fellow with bald-headed man who used to have a German Shepherd dog on the mall that he would walk around. He also has an English accent. He was previously, he tells me, employed with the London Metropolitan Police in England. We actually had a rather long, interesting conversation at the jail as we waited for Sergeant Baker to come. He was polite and correct with me once I was in custody. He and I have a somewhat adversarial relationship. I called him out with his dog on the mall, suggesting it was completely inappropriate to have attack dogs on the mall and walking up and down. It was very intimidating, and eventually they removed the dogs from the mall. And also I found his behavior towards homeless people at different times, poor people, street people, perhaps under the direction of Sergeant Baker, not the best. And I'll give specific instances of that, and I think I have in the past and will again. But a specific thing he did here was he claimed that he had told me what the charges were. I believe he told me something about trespass that was not the charge. And the reason he didn't want to repeat what the charge was because he didn't know what the charge was. And so he, in essence, was colluding in a false arrest. He was holding me prior to a specific charge being gotten by Sergeant Baker. You do not allow yourself to be kidnapped and removed from a public meeting. I mean, let's put it this way. There's no sanction. There's no permission to do that in the Constitution or in the laws until there is a specific crime, and that process has been followed. This was not followed, and Brandt probably knew that. So he was not stating the record correctly. He was defending himself against charges from Becky Johnson and my muffled shout from the police car, "What am I being charged with?" Which, by the way, is a very good question to ask whenever you're being arrested. People try to sort of believe, oh, if we're just nice to the police, they'll treat us better. It's not that you should be unnecessarily rude to a police officer, or certainly not threatening, but it's important to be loud and clear about what's going on so that the witnesses surrounding can know what's happening and so that you make a record of what's happening. If they ask you if you can be searched and you're not being arrested, the proper answer is no, you can't search me. And if they want to detain you without arresting you, the proper question is, why are you detaining me? What crime are you investigating? What specific reason do you have to speak to me? You get that first before you answer them, and then you don't answer any questions either, is generally the thing to do. Unless for some other reason you wish to cooperate with the police. I mean, if you've seen a crime and you wish to report it, that's one thing. Or if you, you know, wish to be of assistance in a particular criminal investigation, that's another. But simply to give police this incredible deference that they have in our society, particularly after Bush's escalation of the war on the citizenry using this bogus terrorist threat. And I say bogus because that's what it is. It is bogus. The fact that there was one huge incident has become the basis for scrapping the entire Constitution and rewriting the laws about search and seizure and the Internet. And it's, and also, of course, our national priorities. And I think that I have to say, this may be having its reverberations here in Santa Cruz, although there have been arrests at city council prior to 9/11 by repressive city council mayors such as Sugar, who feel that they have the right to impose their will even if the First Amendment says people have a right to speak. To some extent, it may be a male thing. I didn't see a lot of this happening under Mayor Celia Scott and Mayor Catherine Byers, so we boys apparently like to take control, whereas or take control by repressing and forcing and demanding and using police, whereas the power of persuasion can often be much more useful and much more effective. I spoke Friday before a class at CSU Monterey Bay down there in Seaside area, a class on free speech, and the students were saying to me they saw the videotape and they were just amazed. There were some skeptics beforehand who wondered, well, if you stand up and give a Nazi salute and interrupt a meeting, that's disruptive. And I had to point out to them that the way it happened was the mayor was disrupting his own meeting, and I gave a brief response from the audience that lasted no more than a second, and it was it would have been legitimate regardless. Unless I had raised my voice and stopped the meeting, it would have been legitimate to do it for a long period of time, as far as I'm concerned, even if people don't like it. I think that the pressure from the community around me would have made it very difficult for me to do that. I mean, let's suppose I was actually a Nazi in the chambers and I wanted to do that for some other reason. That's my right as an American citizen to express my political sentiments, provided I don't do so in a fashion that will stop the chair from proceeding, and that does not stop the chair from proceeding. I mean, I can imagine circumstances under which it might. I mean, if there was some Jewish victims of the Holocaust or had relatives lost in the Holocaust in the audience, and there was anger broke out in some dispute, the mayor might then appeal to all parties to, you know, this is a public meeting, and suggest that the thing had to be taken outside. None of that happened. There was none of that going on. And of course, it was not about Nazism. It was about repression by the city council. And that was the issue, of course, that the council does not want to take up, does not want to discuss, once taken off air and seen off air. Also, I was arrested during a recess. So that is another reason the arrest was a false arrest. There was no disruption happening during the recess. Another point is that I was told that I had to be kept in custody, taken to the jail, and held for 5.5 hours to be booked because I might return to the council meeting. I specifically told the officer I wouldn't be coming back, that I'd made my point, and clarified that several times. He insisted that, oh, he had to do this. And that would sound less personal if Baker hadn't done this on two prior occasions. This is the same sergeant who arrested me for sitting at a table in the mall and near Yuppie Planter, before it was Yuppie Planter, when it was Hippie Planter, when there was no fence there in front of New Leaf Market, with a petition with voter registration forms, because he claimed, on citizen complaint again, that I was blocking the sidewalk. This time he took me in cuffs away, didn't cite me and release me as he could have there, held me for a period of time at the police station and released me. Again, a gratuitous form of arrest which couldn't be allowed for other... If you did this to any other individual, it would be a form of kidnapping, and you'd be up for felony charges. But for Baker, it's business as usual. And then it happened 5 months before at the farmer's market when I was circulating a petition. And at that point, Sergeant Baker, rather than allowing the officer under him to cite and release me, insisted that first he sort of suggested, I'll cite you right around the corner, took me to the squad car. The minute he had me there, he handcuffed me, took me to the police station, causing me to be late for a television show on the same subject, the question of harassment of musicians at the farmer's market. Baker has a record of doing this and a history of doing this. Now, he claims that it was ordered by his lieutenant, Sepulveda, probably on the advice of Baker that I would threaten to come back and disrupt the council meeting again. I had no such plans to do that. I actually finished the item that I was there for, which was the oral communications period. I was not allowed to speak. I had wasted already a half hour of my time there. And the mayor and the council seems to like wasting the time of the Santa Cruz community. Well, we get to, again, to watch them talk for hours. They should be limited in their speech time, by the way, like legislators at the state and federal level. They should be allowed to speak for limited periods of time on the subject matter and move on. And the public should have more time to speak. That just, to me, that's how it should be. I've actually made these suggestions in writing to Mayor Crone. We had a long discussion about it. Two discussions, actually. He's completely ignored everything I've said, which, of course, is his right. But now, of course, he'll have to ignore it at the court level, which he will not be able to do. And so, in a way, you might consider this a blessing because the issue will now come up publicly. I will learn, hopefully, tomorrow from the district attorney's office whether they intend to pursue this. I've been unable to get a police report yet because they have this, again, bureaucratic public thwarting process at the police station, which requires the district attorney to release reports before they can be seen by even the victims of a crime, much less the suspects. So I haven't been able to see the police report on this just to see how what spin they're giving it, but hopefully I will soon. And I believe there will be a press conference in the next few days where we will discuss the lawsuit. And I don't mean the criminal trial against me. I mean the trial against the city, the mayor, and the police for this bust. And why should I proceed to put this energy into this whole thing? I mean, I was thinking about this. I found myself saying, this is just, so much fervor about nothing. You know, why bother with it? Well, it is, as I said, the latest in a long, long train of repressive behaviors by city council that we actually were going to have a big thermometer a couple years ago of Brown Act violations where they are, Brown Act violations where they limit the public's right to know what's going on or the right to participate, or they change things around after they're at the council meeting, or they shut up the public, or they exclude the public. This is what the Brown Act is about. Or they hold closed meetings so the public can't attend. And there's so many instances of this. We were going to have a thermometer when it goes over the top. We were going to try to do a recall of was then Mayor Sugar. And it went over the top. We never actually got the actual thermometer down to city council, the kind of a big paper thermometer, about 6 or 7 feet high like you have when you want to do a kind of pledge drive on a radio or something. We never did that. But the reason to proceed on these legal cases is because the council doesn't listen to anything else. And so it is, for example, when I was in Denny's and six of us sat in Denny's and were arrested in 1989 because Barbara Haglund, a homeless woman, was denied a cup of coffee. And my fellow activist Jane Immler told me, don't let yourself be talked out of a lawsuit. I did, and I've regretted it ever since. If we had sued Denny's at that point, homeless people and everybody else would be in much better shape at Denny's. And we found that Denny's continued to act against African Americans for years after this, even in spite of massive publicity. So, you know, it's the legal tool. When you kick them in the wallet, their hearts and minds tend to follow, or at least their behavior follows. They can have whatever point of view they want. They can feel however they want. They can, you can hate blacks and homeless people as much as you want. You can hang up your sign, "We reserve the right to refuse service to anyone in a restaurant," but you damn well better serve them if they show up. That's been the point, I think, that civil rights activists have made in the last 30 or 40 years. And that is the point we have to make in Santa Cruz, that you can promulgate all the fear and hostility and Ku Klux Klan style stupidity that you want. That's your right as under the First Amendment. However, you cannot arrest someone for sleeping at night on public property if there is no legal place for them to go. You can't arrest them for setting up a tent when it's raining if they're poor and they have no place to go and you wish to simply just drive them away. That you can't do. Unfortunately, this council lacks the constitutional fortitude to do anything around this issue other than to listen to the bigotry and fear of Supervisor Marty Wormhout and Supervisor Challenger Mark Premack, who is just as bad, if not worse, on this issue, unfortunately. So we need to get together and do something, and that's why I'm proposing that we get together in a homeless summit May 3rd and 4th. Actually, it wasn't even my proposal. It was a proposal by activist Thomas Levitt, a Green Party activist with the grassroots Greens who are supporting the now shrunken and hidden away Camp Paradise, which we'll have a report on later in the show. Now this.
There was only a machine. Where shield that stops our seeing that we are all together here, and we still have the choice of human being. Human being. Human being. Human being.
And that was more Barbara Anderson from Evening's Bed, Human Being. Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 is where you're at. I'm Robert Norse, 427-3772. 427-3772 is our call-in number. Lines are open if you want to call in. And we're hoping later to talk with activist Jerry Henry of Aptos, who may be coming into the studio. We may be getting a call from Jenny Jett of Santa Barbara. If we can reach her, she's the Isla Vista activist whose camp Home Sweet Home has set up and is fighting in Santa Barbara for the civil right to survive, as Camp Paradise did last fall, as Dignity Village did winter before this one, and as Tent City 3 in Seattle did 2 years ago, successfully, all of them, although Camp Paradise has been reduced to sort of a core group, which is moved out to the, I guess, the Aptos area in a church sanctuary, which is a good thing. Although, in another sense, not a good thing, because now people really can't join them in the same numbers that they used to. They don't really serve as an overflow campground anymore, as far as I know. And if I'm wrong about that, I'm being glad to announce that, and we're going to be actually contacting Camp Paradise and talking to them. Again, about this issue of city council and what your rights are, and I mentioned the word the Brown Act a couple of times. The Brown Act is 54950.5 of the government code. You can actually get it by going on the Internet. That's 54950.5 of the government code. It's called the Ralph M. Brown Act. I'm going to read a couple sections from this act because it'll give you a sense of what it means when I talk about this and why it's important that we know what our rights are in public bodies. In enacting this chapter, the legislature finds and declares that the public commissions, boards, and councils, and the other public agencies in the state exist to aid in the conduct of the people's business. It is the intent of the law that their actions be taken openly and their deliberations be conducted openly. The people of the state do not yield their sovereignty to the agencies which serve them. The people in delegating authority do not give their public servants the right to decide what is good for the people to know and what is not good for them to know. The people insist on remaining informed so that they may retain control over the instruments they have created. And that's the introduction, 54950. Here's 5493, Section A. All meetings of the legislative body of a local agency shall be open and public, and all persons shall be permitted to attend any meeting of the legislative body of a local agency except otherwise provided in this chapter. And that has to do with closed meetings where they're talking about litigation matters or personnel matters. So I had a right to be at that meeting. That is a preeminent privileged right under the First Amendment and under this state law. Another section, the legislative body of a local agency, this is Section C of 59554, shall not prohibit public criticism of the policies, procedures, programs, or services of the agency, or of the acts or omissions of the legislative body. Nothing in the subsection shall confer any privilege or protection for expression beyond that otherwise provided by law. And here's another section that was violated. 5954.3a. Every agenda for regular meeting shall provide an opportunity for members of the public to directly address the legislative body on any item of interest to the public before ordering the legislative body's consideration of the item that is within the subject matter jurisdiction of the legislative body, provided that no action shall be taken on any item not appearing on the agenda. Actually, this has been violated on other occasions, but it was not violated on the night I was arrested. this says that they have to provide public comment periods. Now, it's an interesting question as to whether they can exclude people from public comment. Obviously, it has to be reasonable. They, you know, they don't have to let everybody they don't have to let people talk at length for 5 or 6 hours, because the business of the legislature has to proceed. But as I mentioned before, the Santa Cruz Board of Supervisors, as I understand it from the clerk of the board, allows for unlimited oral communication in terms of the number of people. Each person only gets 3 minutes. But unlike Mayor Crone's regime at City Council, where they not just limit you to 2 minutes, but only give a total of 30 minutes for all speakers, there's unlimited time for oral communication. I'm told that Santa Monica's process is they allow unlimited time, but they put out you have the first 30 minutes at the beginning of the meeting, and all the rest gets shoveled back to the end. But there's no such process here in Santa Cruz. So I met with Mayor Crone back in January, and after presenting him a letter for him to consider, because I wanted him to consider some changes in the process of City Council to make it more public-friendly and also more friendly to the law, the Brown Act, and to the Constitution. Some of this letter is as follows. First, in this letter, I itemized 15 things he did that were good. This is based on the suggestions of people that you can get more flies with honey than with vinegar. Not always true, unfortunately, with politicians. You sometimes, if they say you can't teach an old dog new tricks, but you can always beat him with a rolled-up newspaper. That sometimes is really necessary with the City Council and with other legislative bodies who do not want to listen because they believe they know everything and decides they don't have to listen to you anyway. Anyway, I listed a whole bunch of positive things they did that Crone had done, and I had some trouble finding them, and they aren't the most major things. And I'm not going to read them here because I'm not here to bolster Crone's record at this point. But I did specify them, and I'm happy to give this letter to anybody who wants it. There were a total of 13 positive aspects to Crone's 2-year tenure that I pointed out. Then I said, unfortunately, my concerns outweigh my appreciations. In preparation for the January 3rd meeting tomorrow at the Java House, I would ask you to consider the following issues. 1. Limiting council time on debate, as state and federal legislature does. And expanding public time. Consider the 1 minute given the public on the Beach Street bike lane compared to the hours of time council expended in debate. Reopening the public hearing when appropriate is another important reform you can make. I've already discussed this. I think there should be a second period of comment on important items. 2. Fulfilling commitments made but not kept, particularly on those issues you've actually gotten passed at City Council, which are now law or policy. These include most noticeably, A, the Task Force on Bathrooms commitment to deal with bathrooms, not just porta-potties, and to consider sanitary facilities in the industrial zones where people camp. It would also be good to look into such things as public accessible bathrooms by paying businesses the way Santa Barbara does, and restore the porta-potties removed by Public Works without public notice, hearing, or discussion. That was both at San Lorenzo Lumberyard and at also the in back of the Catalyst. Apparently those porta-potties were removed. There's supposed to be 5. There are only 3 now downtown. Also, Section 2 of your June 2000 resolution directing Cole at the Homeless Services Center and Wilson, our city manager for life, to look into private property shelter for homeless in and out of vehicles. This was never done in spite of a specific letter of concern I wrote in November 2000 asking for the results of their non-existent investigation. The third unfulfilled thing, which was now law or policy, which I asked Crone to get going on, was the October 23rd resolution regarding the alternate sites for Camp Paradise and the evacuation plan resolution, which you told me will be on the first council agenda in February. And it came up with a sort of a very vague set of concerns. It didn't really address the sites. They did, however, the council did pass this extremely token, rather unhelpful measure that allows people to, if they can form organizations that have $1 million insurance policies or get nonprofit backing, 15 people with the permission of Czar for Life, Jim Lang of the Parks and Rec Department, they can for 15 days stay in one of 3 parks if they're doing a conservation project. And Scott Rhodes is an activist who's gotten 3 letters printed in the Sentinel and has gotten a great letter printed in this week's Good Times, really properly calls the council on this. Council member Sugar tried to cut him off at the mic about a month ago when he tried to speak on this issue. He was claiming that their resolution was to force people to do work in order to be able to have the right to sleep, to be a part of a conservation project, was a form of slave labor. And apparently Sugar didn't like the sound of this, interfered with his self-image, perhaps. He said, oh, you're not talking about this, this is not on target, this is not on topic. And he got Crone to agree with him, but Rhodes continued nonetheless, and they didn't have the... Luckily, they didn't try to exclude him from the chamber, but again, they harassed him for speaking. And this is another example of violation of the Brown Act. You don't harass the public for speaking. If they're really off target, you can point that out. But he was talking about the particular section that was passed by the city council, which allows people to sleep only under very, very limited circumstances where they do work. So those who do not work shall not sleep. He was saying this is slave labor, and he was right. Particularly where the rest of the homeless population, the other 1,000 to 2,000 people, have no legal place to go. Even if they want to work. Even if they want to do slave labor, they can't do it. I mean, it's just... Again, we're talking about the processes at city council and how repressive they are. And again, how this is not sort of... I suddenly decided to stand up and start screaming and goose-stepping up and down in some sort of... sullen display of narcissistic self-indulgence. This is after a long period of discussion, a long period of trying to meet with city council members, meeting with them, writing to them, getting no response at all of any significant sort in terms of any willingness to address these issues. Another thing, the unkept promises of the Homeless Issues Task Force, whose resolutions have never had a fair hearing or any kind of meaningful advocacy from you. The Homeless Issues Task Force members got together on your recommendation and spent more than 100 hours each for nearly a year. All that came out of this force was a job for Officer Seeley, the homeless resources officer, recently most famous for harassing homeless people at or around the former site of Camp Paradise. That was back in November and December. November, actually. Advertising resources that didn't and don't exist. Their emergency resolutions for camping ban abolition, that is to say the Homeless Issues Task Force's emergency resolutions, rent control, need to be reconsidered not just as matters of substance, but because they didn't receive decent process in the first place. And finally, the December 11th, 2001 meeting where you promised a progress report on the Camp Paradise situation, and he promised it again in January, didn't give it. I think it came back in February, and essentially it was no progress.
Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Oh, fuck the FCC.
Well said.
Thank you. I'm wondering about collective meetings. Is this a weekend that the collective is meeting, the Free Radio Collective?
That's a good question. You know, I think it's next week. But the thing for you to do, no, actually, this may be the weekend, actually, is to call the voicemail.
Okay.
Because I don't... I'm a rare attendant at those meetings. I come usually when, you know, I'm asked to come by some other member of the collective or potential member of the collective.
Uh-huh.
Does that answer your question?
So the number for the voicemail is?
427-4523.
Yes. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
And lines are open in case you want to talk about anything we're talking about on the show, or if you have any general questions, we'd be happy to try to answer those as well. 427-3772 is our number, and the voicemail is 427-4523. Again, 427-3772 to call in. If you happen to want to get a message through to me personally or to the organization HUFF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, it's 423-HUFF, 423-4833. And HUFF meets every Wednesday, 8:30 in the morning, Baker Square. We'll be meeting there at 1107 Ocean.
Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hi, Robert.
Hi.
I just had a couple questions about your arrest at City Council the other day.
Okay. Who's calling in?
Oh, my name's Leslie.
Hey, Leslie.
Would you guys please be quiet? The people who are speaking, was there any reason? I don't understand. They just cut them off because they didn't like what these three people were saying. Were there other people who spoke before?
No, they didn't cut them off because they didn't like their content. At least what they did was, Crone said, he looked at the line at the beginning of oral communications. He counted the number of hands that went up, and he said, okay, I'm going to give 2 minutes to each speaker and allow only a total of 30 minutes oral communication. So in other words, there were about... oh, I don't know, 15 speakers, maybe. And so instead of allowing each speaker their usual 3 minutes and extending oral communication for 15 minutes, he cut back people's time to 2 minutes. Then, as the last three speakers approached, myself, Susan Zeman, and Michael Tomasi, he told Michael Tomasi and myself that we had spoken at the last meeting. I had spoken at the last meeting, and therefore I would have to go to the end of the line, and I agreed, that's fine. Tomasi had tried to speak at the last meeting, but was evicted by Mayor Crone because he spoke in an angry tone about Sergeant Baker and Baker's harassment of him and his vehicle. And he was rather loud and intemperate, but, you know, that's the nature of democracy, and that's... Tomasi is a sort of a borderline case. But in any case, the third speaker was Susan Zeman. She was actually the one who was next up when this issue began. She kind of prompted this whole thing. She hadn't spoken at all. And she just went to the mic and asked to be able to speak for 2 minutes. And Crone refused to allow her to speak, saying that the time was up, that he had designated. Now, it should also be said... Are you catching this?
Yeah, kind of. I'm sorry, my kids won't be quiet in the background.
No, I appreciate that. It should also be said that Crone also interrupted one speaker at length with a series of questions and dialogue. So he cut back the communication time before the actual 30 minutes was up. I mean, he injected his own voice into the matter, so he should have extended it to cover the time that he took away from the whole oral communications period, if you follow what I mean.
Yeah.
So, in other words, then what happened was Michael Tomasi, he told Susan Zeman she couldn't speak at the mic. Michael Tomasi went off and angrily erupted and then stormed out of the room. He was escorted out of the room. He told Zeman, the mayor told Zeman, get away from the mic or I'll have you arrested. Maybe this is not the time to tell you. I'm kind of repeating the story that I did this. But
yeah, well, this is really weird.
Anyway, I think you may catch the gist of it. And again, for those who just tuned in, that's what happened. We're talking about the city council meeting on Tuesday.
Yeah, I think it's a big step when they just start cutting people off. And also, my question was, did they give you any warning? I mean, it would be nice if they would warn you, you know,
I had been warned that if you give a Nazi salute in the city council, you will be asked to leave the chambers.
You had been warned previously.
I've been warned under Mayor Fitzmaurice's regime, and I hadn't been warned by Crone, but when Fitzmaurice was mayor, he had told me that, and I, in essence, had replied, this is a free speech issue. You can't tell me what clothes to wear to city council. You can't tell me what to say at the mic. You can't tell me what gestures to make from the audience unless they are stopping the meeting from proceeding. You don't get a heckler's veto, as we call it, by saying, oh, that's too far beyond the pale. You can't do that you can propose suggestions, but you cannot impose those kinds of concerns.
Right, because, I was arrested back when they had the protest at City Hall for having a sign at City Hall, which I thought was pretty outrageous. And, I got pretty mad about it, and I ended up touching the officer's hand to remove his hand from my sign. And so, it wasn't...
What did your sign say?
It said, sleep is not a crime.
And when was this?
And it was, it was when Rotkin made the rules about you can only have a sign that's a certain dimension, right? They had like 11 by 17 or whatever there.
Mm-hmm.
And then I set it down for a minute. They said, you can't set the signs down. You have to hold on to them. And it was also Sergeant Baker who was there who did the arrest at that time. Sergeant Eveleth and Sergeant Baker. And, I got pretty loud and irate about it.
As you should.
Yeah, and...
You are being denied a very basic right.
It's the same thing when the people put up the sign on the bridge and, you can put a flag, but you can't put this. You can do this, but you can't do that. You can have a sign this way, but you can't have it that way. It's a pattern here. It's definitely becoming a pattern of, civil rights abuses.
And yes, it is, and I'm hoping...
I think that these officers need to be taken to court.
Yeah, the officers, the mayor, the whole city... governmental structure that is allowing this. And that's what we're going to do.
Right. How about this guy from England? Did he have to go through a course in the Constitution or anything? They don't have a First Amendment in England.
That's true.
And
they don't.
I guess
they don't
Santa
have a
Cruz is heading that direction. It's been that way since I've been here.
Right. They don't pay too much attention to the First Amendment unless you, as they said, well, I guess A.J. Liebling said it best. He was the man who said there is freedom of the press in America for anyone who owns one.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's good. I'm glad you're on Indie Media.
Hey, thank you.
We got one now, so all right.
Thank
well,
you.
Good luck.
Hey, Leslie, bring your sign next Tuesday.
All right. And if you have any meetings about this, on your lawsuit going on.
Come to the Huff meeting at 8:30 at Baker's Square on Wednesday morning. That's
okay.
What we'll be talking about it there.
Okay.
All righty.
All right. Take care.
Bye-bye.
And that was Leslie Scales, who has been fighting for civil rights for homeless people for a decade or thereabouts in Santa Cruz. And she describes vividly what they were doing under Mayor Rotkin. So you can say, why are we singling out poor Mayor Crone? Well, poor Mayor Crone ran on a platform of ending this kind of shit, having more public process. When he was in the audience, he was oh so sympathetic when Rotkin was engaging in abuses with Kennedy to cut back the public comment and to limit people holding signs and things like that. Rotkin tried to have me arrested for using a council member's name at the mic. And I believe Sugar tried to do the same thing later on. And I'm not saying, you damn fucking scumbag. That wasn't what I was saying. I was holding up members accountable for political behavior they had engaged in. I think I was talking about Fitzmaurice and the Dolphin Lee and something of that effect. This attempt to require people to carefully use vocabulary that is acceptable to the city council is clearly an attack on your right to say what you need to say at city council, to the community and to the council. And unless we take a stand, we lose where we're standing, we lose where we're sitting, we lose what we got in terms of any public process. And that's something we need to be, I think, taking very seriously. I encourage people to come to the Huff meeting, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, at Wednesday, 8:30 in the morning, Baker Square, 1107 Ocean Street. If you can't come, leave me a message. I really would encourage your participation in that, because I think that it's an issue that needs your help. I don't have an attorney yet for defense for this case, and I don't even have an attorney for a civil lawsuit, although I think this is a slam dunk. Although I'm not an attorney, and we have to yet see what kind of a case they present. I was reading to you a letter that I wrote to Mayor Crone back in January. And I suggested to him that he press on with his proposed expansion of the public process, which at first involves reversing the repressive decorum regulations of your immediate predecessor, Fitzmaurice, who rewrote council rules to muzzle dissidents. The written rules came along with the Fitzmaurice-Brooks coffee klatch lawsuit as part of a rather clear zero-tolerance policy. For those who don't remember, the coffee klatch lawsuit was when Fitzmaurice claimed that three of us who were peacefully lobbying city council members in their offices. We would sit in the public area of the office with literature and with signs, and we would try to make appointments with council members during last winter in order to get the sleeping ban suspended, in order to get the blanket ban annulled, in order to get shelter space increased, because they wouldn't do anything, it wouldn't put anything on the agenda. Fitzmaurice used Anna Brooks, the secretary, claiming that we were harassing her in a series of groundless concerns that were eventually dissolved and dismissed 5 months later by Judge Stevens in court. But during that five-month period, we were barred from city council offices, barred from city council meetings unless we were there for specific public meetings, barred from the city council complex unless we were engaged in particular business at the city council offices that going to and from. In other words, this is a repressive regime. And immediately after this, Fitzmaurice instituted, after we won in court, he unilaterally declared a set of decorum rules without any public discussion, which I'm going to read to you later, and then we responded with our own set of counter-decorum rules, suggesting the council is what needs decorum toward the public, not the public, toward the council. The written mismanner rules of Fitzmaurice are not as important as enforcement practices. You might remember that Mayor Celia Scott went through her entire turbulent term as mayor without having one person arrested or removed from city council chambers, according to Scott Graham's recollections. In particular, mayoral and council interruptions of public speakers from the podium, those giving oral comment are usually eager to have their discussion with or even response from council, but not abruptly, without permission, in the midst of their brief speaking time. In fact, it would be a healthy change to recognize hands raised from the public and allow people to speak briefly in the council discussion after the public comment period. Censoring of public speakers from using forbidden words like furor and flunky, which annoy or discomfort council members or their appointees. Repeated obscenities and clear threats are one thing. Criticism of public policy is another. You have to be able to use your own vocabulary. C, repression of peaceful, silent protest in council chambers. We just heard this caller call in and talk about her sign, how this kind of rigid attempt to stop people from holding up a sign or insisting that they hold it up and not have it next to them, or they can't be too large, can't be this size, it can't be that. All this attempt to use apparent reasonable restrictions which are actually being designed to harass those who had signs. Interestingly enough, the one time that I know that the police chief, Steve Belcher, actually lied on the stand, perjured himself in court, was in a situation where he was actually vice chief at the time. It was in 1989, and there was a meeting of on the issue of the Navy ship, whether the Navy ship should come and visit Santa Cruz. A lot of anti-war activists thought, no, we don't want this Navy ship here. At the same meeting, there was homeless activists, because it was around the coldest time of the year, in February 1989, and there was a large number of homeless activists who had signs and so forth. We were thinking of doing a sleep-in in city council. I was actually arrested for not leaving council chambers quickly enough. And we went to court, we were tried, and we were found not guilty by a jury. That was myself, Ned von Falkenberg, and Fran Rizzo in the Santa Cruz 3 case of 1989. But in that same meeting, there were a whole series of signs that people had about, you know, we don't want the Navy ship, we do want the Navy ship, and then a bunch of homeless signs. Well, Chief Belcher came, and he was then Vice Chief Belcher, and specifically took the non-homeless signs, took the homeless signs and left the non-homeless signs there. He took them away and trashed them, or he confiscated them, he removed them. And this was asked about on the stand, and he said this was not the case. But when I talked to Ned von Falkenberg, and he's publicly stated this is the case, he said that Chief Belcher lied on this issue. And I believe von Falkenberg, who is now kind of an adversary of mine on other issues, such as the Dolphin Lee, we've kind of had a parting of the ways. But this is a clear case to me of the then vice chief of police, now the chief of police, feeling he can just disregard the truth, even in a court setting. And if Steve Belcher wants to dispute this, I'd be happy to have him come on the air and talk about it, give his side of the story, and we can straighten this whole thing out. I'm reading to you a letter from me to Mayor Crone concerning changes we need at City Council so we don't have people dragged off for suggesting in a peaceful but articulate way that the council is acting repressively when it is. And so then it acts even more repressively to show, I guess it's a way of getting some great theater going, but I'd like less time in jail and less theater and more action at the city council on substantive issues. And that's what I'm trying to get. Repression of peaceful, silent protest in council chambers, directing those in the back of the room to put down signs, threatening expulsion for a fascist salute, ordering me removed from council chambers for making a yak-yak motion with my hand while another council member was going on at length. It might also be healthy to recognize how disrespectful council members are themselves while members of the public they don't like are addressing them. They eat, rattle papers, get up and leave, laugh, interrupt, etc. I don't suggest council members hypocritically pretend to be interested in what the public is saying, but I don't feel the public should be punished for doing the same thing. Content-based repression of brief, spontaneous, negative reaction, cutting off of communication and discussion was just another in a long train of abuses that the city council is engaged in. And again, it was, if you look at the videotape, and the videotape is on Setz, Councilmember Fitzmaurice. I think he should perhaps retire to the Hill and the university if he's really upset about these issues. And he was called today, by the way, as was Councilmember or Mayor Crone, to know that there was criticisms of their political conduct happening on the air today. And Fitzmaurice has never called into this show. I think he's unwilling to stand on his record or to debate it. But if he chooses to do so today, I'd be happy to give him a forum to speak, because I'd like to hear what he has to say about these issues. So, Tim, 427-3772 is the number to call if you'd like to call in. The same for you, Chris Crone, if you're willing to do so. 427-3772. Another thing I suggested was expansion of oral communications and public hearing time, a long unfulfilled promise. Even the wording of the time allowed for oral communication in the printed agenda has become more restrictive. From ordinarily limited to 3 minutes has been changed now to limited to 3 minutes. At your first council meeting as mayor, you essentially muzzled more than half the 23 speakers at oral communication, though you put other counts in the issues at city council. You should also take a special care to follow the Brown Act around issues like board meetings that have council involvement, council member voting, and council funding, such as the Mercy Charities Housing Advisory Board, which needs to be open and agendized for the public. Mercy Housing operates as a sort of independent feudal fiefdom, even though it is funded by council and conducting public business. Previous mayors have refused to correct this outrageous Brown Act violation. Judicial action could require that Dolphin Lee actions be undone. That is, not allowing council to pass or discuss resolutions where the public is not fully advised as to what is going on. This is boiled down to, in the past, fair scheduling, holding over debate until a later council meeting when it's going past midnight, or not scheduling council meetings at unusual times, such as late morning or early afternoon, as was done under Fuhrer Fitzmaurice. I added the word Fuhrer, it wasn't in the letter, for the giving away of the entire housing fund for one Mercy Housing project. Full information, making sure that all information available to council members is available to the public. Hence, if a council member arrives with a resolution in her pocket, as Council Member Riley apparently did on October 23rd with her Enforce All Laws on the River Anti-Paradise measure, it should be circulated to the public before it is discussed, so they, the public, can have fair opportunity to comment on it during the public comment period. Also, not allow votes on measures not fully agendized, so that, the buyer's resolution of June 25th, 2000, which killed the safe sleeping zones at 1 a.m. in the morning, see scheduling, which was significantly off-topic, should not be permitted, but they allowed it to proceed anyway. So in other words, if they are talking about something that the public doesn't know they're talking about, that's a violation of public process. Also, and here's something that directly affects me, not excluding members of the public from council chambers unless city council is significantly disrupted, such as by prolonged chanting, personal threats, etc. A negative out-of-order comment or reaction to council behavior is a healthy democratic response, not something that deserves police action. Apparently, Christopher Crone believes otherwise. Fair treatment of the media, particularly the alternative media, restoring the right of video media to film from an accessible position. So, for instance, you see three videographers at council meetings, and they're community television people filming. They're paid to do that by the council. But if someone like Becky Johnson, an independent video journalist, tries to get behind the dais where this other media are, she may find herself in trouble. She was finding herself in trouble in the past. That may be something she hasn't been able to overcome. But for the whole year throughout the Fitzmaurice regime, this was a block to the media. And it's important to be able to film the media, so to be able to, for the media to be able to film people at the mic face on, so they can see them. Otherwise, you can film them from the back, but that is not as effective or as revealing or as helpful to the public. Restoring reasonable audio access to the media. Now, I, for example, have been barred from leaving a tape recorder at the mic so that I can catch the oral communication speakers. They tell you that you can plug into a box over at the side, but I found it doesn't work on my tape recorders. So I'm not able, I have to purchase tapes later. And people who don't have any money aren't able to purchase tapes. Sometimes I can't purchase tapes. If there's a delay in doing so, it is an unfair and unnecessary restriction on the media that was imposed, again, by Fitzmaurice and has been continued by Christopher Crone. Sergeant Baker came up to me a month ago and said, "This is your tape recorder at the mic. You better take it, because I'm going to take it away from you." Meaning, he would not allow it to stay there. He would do what the city council told him to do, which is to confiscate the recorder. I think at the next council meeting, I will let that happen, and then I will simply see if I can get a lawsuit going. There actually are a number of things that may happen at the next city council. There's already been at least one member of the public who says that he intends to speak using words that the council has indicated they don't want to hear, perhaps making gestures that the council doesn't want to hear, reading an opinion from the First Amendment Foundation that he's been in touch with, that it is decorum rules are completely discretionary. They are advice to the public. They are not law by any means. And so all this intimidation that's been going on for the last decade around these rules is wrong, and the public has the right to reassert its control of the public process, or at least its right to participate in the public process. Returning to the issue of substance again briefly, your counsel's silence or bad votes on the following issues put your credibility in doubt. This is about Mayor Crone, rent control, not putting the sleeping ban on the ballot, not following up on your 1998 sleep as a human right resolution, continued Canfield occupation of the public tide lands, and to ignoring the UCSC petitions against the Bush bombing campaign, ineffective and token citizen police review, outrageous police budgets and cost overruns. And again, we're moving off the public process when we talk about that. Let's take a break. Barbara Anderson and the Naked Truth again. Hearts Dance, 1995 or 6 CD. Really nice. This is Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. We're going to be with you till 1:30. I'm Robert Norris. This is Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides. We give you the broadsides of things and send our broadsides at you. Hoping to have in the studio fairly soon activist Jerry Henry. He's in church, and he's going to come check us out after he does a church service. He's a street minister, and he's been barred from the Rancho de Mar Aptos Shopping Center. In fact, he also has gotten a ticket from Yuppie Planter Falafel Master Alibaba, or Ali Ka, and I actually ran into Jerry Henry in court. I think what I'll do now is play for you a bit of the conversation I had with him a week or two ago. You may remember that Yuppie Planter, of course, is the area that used to be Hippie Planter, where there was folks sitting and kind of gathering in front of New Leaf Market, all now driven away by a redevelopment agency scheme to use the Sushi Now and Alibaba's cafes business problems to move their seats into an enclosed area, their seats and tables, that is now fenced off and forbidden to non-customers during the day, although people can go there at night when the tables and chairs are removed, and people do kind of gather there somewhat. I haven't been down there much recently. Weather hasn't been the best, and I've been looking at other things, and it is a fait accompli, but I think it's important to keep up the letting them know that there's a boycott of those places. Not just don't go to them, but go up to them and say, I'd like to patronize your businesses. And this includes New Leaf Market, by the way, which has remained silent, see no evil, speak no evil, say no evil. But I will not patronize your business in as long as you engage in this process of social cleansing, this process of driving away young and poor people under the somehow illusion that you have a better society downtown without that group of people, or that that's somehow not a human rights violation as it is. Anyway, Jerry Henry was an individual who was involved in this. He got a ticket from Alibaba, who has done numerous citizen complaints. I too, of course, faced that from Matisse Selman for blocking the sidewalk, although I think that whole thing was dropped. Though, as I said, it'll be pursued as a civil lawsuit. I'm going to be taking that up this week. That's another matter that should be coming up. But Jerry, we got a ticket for littering, for dropping crumbs on the sidewalk, breadcrumbs. I think he was removing breadcrumbs from his beard. And I think Alibaba was claiming that he was too near his cafe and was doing so in a fashion that offended either him or his customers. And Alibaba has also taken action against Linda LeMaster and has sued her for, I think, battery or assault in court. We talked about that in past cases, after he dumped all her stuff on the sidewalk and she tossed a soda can at him. And it was Officer Brandt declining to take a citizen's arrest from her, or talking her out of it, but taking it immediately from Ali Ka, the master of harassment legal activity against poor people downtown. I would wager he's done more harassment than anybody downtown that I know of. And continues to do so with a wonderful smile and an open attitude and the friendliest disposition you've ever seen, which is nice, but doesn't have too much to do with the kinds of trouble he's causing people. Anyway, he did this to Jerry Henry, and Jerry Henry talks a little bit about this here in this brief discussion.
Telling Hitler that he wasn't bad because he let one Jew go.
It's at 9 o'clock on March 7th. I'm at the courthouse in the morning, having watched people stagger around with their morning coffee and survive after having gone through the security system. And I've just been told by activist Jerry Henry that Alibaba, or Ali Ka, the owner of Alibaba's cafe, spoke to him yesterday and told him, kind of came up and patted him on the shoulder. Well, why don't you tell it, Jerry?
Well, he wanted to know if we could just go on from this point. And I looked at him and I says, hey, you've had a little girl arrested. I said, why did you have a little girl arrested that was just sitting down looking at Jade in front of me? Why do you call the police? And he says, oh, you talk about the past. That's all the past. He says, I never went to court and pursued any of those tickets. I just had the tickets given. It made me want to throw up. The guy's a slime ball.
Now tell me, for those who don't know, what actually happens to tickets to people that he fills out complaints against and has arrested, even if he doesn't go to court?
Well, I don't know. I think these are really questions that need to be brought up in this community. Is this, because we know that these guys have had the the unbroken support of the thugs with the guns on downtown.
Now, wait a minute. Are you talking about our Santa Cruz Police Department?
Yeah, those thugs with the guns on.
Are you talking about the inestimable Sergeant Butchie Baker?
The thugs with the guns on, yeah.
Well, I guess you see, there is a suggestion. I mean, I know you yourself were arrested for what, dropping food on the sidewalk, or what was your...
No, I took a box of food down to feed the homeless. He had me arrested.
You claimed that you were brushing crumbs out of your beard on the table?
No, I think he declared all kinds of things, didn't he, Scott? Didn't he declare that I was harassing customers? There were no customers there. Did I sit at his tables or something?
Yeah, feeding pigeons.
I didn't sit at his tables. Did I feed pigeons? I didn't feed pigeons. But he had his fascist... What was that fascist gun that he had come down? Richards. Oh, yeah.
Richards.
Oh, yeah. The Mr. Richards, the thug with the gun.
Another Santa Cruz police officer.
Yeah. Well, I think you need to distinguish between peace officers and law enforcement. And I think the law enforcement are the thugs. And I definitely think Richards falls in the categorization of hired thug.
Now, the question you've raised here is, what happens, or at least it raised in my mind, is what happens when tickets get to court? And let's say Alibaba is telling the truth. I have no idea if he is or not, but if he is and doesn't show up in court, will the case still be prosecuted? Yours was dropped, right?
Oh, yeah. Richard sent a letter to me saying that he wished the case to be dismissed under the interest of justice because I wanted to subpoena all these records.
So once you attempted to get the background, they hastily dropped the case.
Yeah, and Alibaba the other day says, "Well, we never go to court, and I never show up at court." Yeah, he lets all these kids get warrants on them and stuff, and he has these thugs out doing his social cleansing for him that have the guns on, getting paid by the citizens.
What name did he use on the ticket? Do you have a copy? Because I'd like to get a copy of that at some point so I can test myself, do a little research into how many tickets he actually has filed in the last 4 or 5 years.
I don't know. We'd have to pull it out of my files at home and see.
I
think it'd be amazing because I've been sitting there when he's had people ticketed sitting right in front of me. Like it's under his stupid deal of over 50 feet, within 50 feet of the ATM. I think it might have been a 1 foot discrepancy. They don't have a tape measure. This little girl the instance I'm talking about, the little girl had been from the Midwest, Richard's ticket, and she'd been in town 24 hours and had received 3 tickets in our social cleansing little community.
We're not talking about Zoe, right? This is another little girl.
Yeah, we're talking about another little girl. A while.
Girl, you mean a young woman who's of a diminutive stature.
Yeah, she had came out to California to see Santa Cruz. She had gotten here, and within 24 hours, she had 3 tickets. Richard sat there and gave her the 3rd ticket. She was sitting there looking at some jade in front of me.
Okay, well, thank you, Jerry. Scott, any comments? You've been around this scene a lot as well.
No.
Thank you. By the way, we're talking with Scott Rhodes, who is the author of several letters to the Sentinel dismissing the sleeping ban changes that allow camping in the parks for a privileged few and a well-funded few as a form of slavery. Did you, in fact, use that phrase?
Well, they need to stop criminalizing the homeless. And when the only reprieve from the sleeping ban from criminalization that you allow is work for the city, I just see that as a form of slavery.
Nazi Germany did pre-war, pick up all the vagrants, make them fill potholes, and I think there was a letter addressing that in the paper the other day.
Yeah, there was. Now, it was a strange letter because it seemed to be supportive of that policy, and yet in revealing that policy, it seemed, of course, would provoke a wave.
At all. I think it was sarcastic.
Oh, really?
That it was definitely Nazi behavior down there.
Yeah.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate the help, as usual.
And that was activist Jerry Henry in court, probably doing something around his appeal. He's appealing appalling charges and convictions from essentially asserting basic civil rights at the Aptus Rancho Del Mar Shopping Center, trying to advise young people about what their rights were. He actually has made his way into the studio with his vicious companion, Scott Rhodes, who's showing up more and more in the public press. In the it was in Good Times this week, Rhodes was, as was he in the Sentinel the last couple months, at least two or three times. Maybe we can get you, Scott, to belly up to the mic over here while Jerry does some natural functions in the back there. See if this mic actually works. Talk very close to the mic, like with about a quarter of an inch away.
Okay, and is that close enough?
A little louder.
All right. Is that better?
That's better. Now say something else.
Okay, is that good?
That's good. To talk directly into it. There you go.
Okay.
A little bit louder. So, Scott, you wrote an article, you wrote a letter to the Good Times this week. I don't know if I have it with me. Do you remember what you were writing about?
The Good Times. That was about...
Actually, I remember the general subject matter had to do
the
with...
The hippie planner downtown.
Right, there was some concern that Jerry, who had suggested, asked Matisse Selman, the owner of Sushi Now, why doesn't he perhaps serve swastikas with his sushi, or maybe...
Well, he wasn't asking Matisse. No,
he wasn't. I know it was a rhetorical comment, but it was an attempt. Essentially, he was saying... Your behavior is such as to indicate a kind of a Nazi-like disposition toward some people on the sidewalk. Is that accurate?
Yeah. I mean, I think that they're definitely making it clear that they wish to cleanse a group of people from that sidewalk. And very much attitude of Nazi Germany to cleanse a group of people from society, a group of undesirable people that they saw as useless to their society. And I think that the attitude is very much the same.
With the fence now in play, and I guess I don't see them getting a lot of business in that fenced-in area. In fact, I've heard people say that less people are patronizing these two kiosks now, Sushi Now and Alibaba's Cafe, which, by the way, I urge you to boycott and to let them know you're boycotting. But... less people do that because they feel like they're in a goldfish bowl. They feel like they're sort of in this, you know, raised up in a platform downtown. Though, of course, it's just they've taken an area that was public and fenced it off. What's your sense on that, Scott? Is there less business than before?
We haven't spent a whole lot of time down there lately. I think it definitely. I think there's definitely a sense that this isn't a public area, a place where people can congregate and talk with each other. That this is sort of a fishbowl.
Has there been increasing or continuing harassment there, or have the police sort of thought, well, we got rid of these kids, now let's see what happens next?
Oh, there's definitely been continuing harassment. Jerry's been confronted a couple times in the last about 2 weeks by the police.
Jerry, you want to talk about that? You kind of belly up to the mic there.
Yeah, I was over at the courthouse looking for some paperwork on my case, and had to wait for somebody to come back, so I thought I'd go over to New Leaf and get something to eat, and got a bowl of soup, and I had just walked out of New Leaf and was sitting there eating my bowl of soup, and here I had a police officer screaming within inches of my face at a young man that I was standing there talking to, and screaming that he had been warned many times not to lean against the wall, to move along. And I think what they've done, and the minute the police officer was done, I gave him a great big Sig Heil.
Did Mayor Crone arrest you? Or?
No.
Okay.
But I think what they've done is very much to, rather than a speed trap, which we all know is illegal because it's entrapment, that they have built a social speed trap in front of New Leaf, and the fact that they have created a situation that if anybody hesitates, pauses, stops, they're subject to attack if they don't look as though they're the right person. They seem to be willing to attack if you're within 10 feet of a building. And then the same day, I had a police officer inform us about the railing, that there was going to be 10 feet. Well, when you look at it and they make the feet zone and you only have 8 feet of sidewalk left, it's they've definitely built a trap that's going to be interesting to see how they use it. I've already seen a bit of medicine about how they intend to use it.
It just gives a whole new meaning to imaginary numbers. I mean, if it's 10 feet from a building and 10 feet from that railing, then I guess you can walk through the imaginary numbers zone because there's no place to go. I mean, in fact, it's legal to be 2 feet from a building, 1 foot from a building, provided you aren't A, leaning against it, or B, sitting down there. And if you have your own chair, it's illegal. It's legal to bring your own chair as part of the so-called non-commercial display. Where do all these crazy rules come from? You are Santa Cruz City Council. The downtown ordinance is passed by Scott Kennedy's council, in which Mayor Crone has refused to put on the agenda for re-examination, even though they were brought up at the Homeless Issues Task Force as examples of laws, as you say, used as social traps to harass those that the city council, well, the downtown association in this case, through the city council, wants to get rid of or see less of. We have an incoming call here. Let me give you a... Why don't you guys listen through these? We'll try and see what's cooking.
Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hello. Interesting show. Yeah, that thing, I went downtown and I took a look at it, and I guess it was after the kiosks were closed because it was full of the people who would usually be hanging out in that area.
Mm-hmm.
And it looked a lot like a playpen. Actually, just kind of passing by. It was
yep, yuppie playpen during the day, hippie playpen during the night.
Pretty surreal. So I'm wondering, why are these people, what is it about the people who hang out in this area that is so undesirable? Who are these people?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I've been there. I've seen youth there. I've seen elderly there. I've seen a lot of unemployed people there. I've seen people who could benefit from, you know, anything from any... I've seen, quote, normal people there, and I've seen people who might be considered mentally, in need of treatment.
Mm-hmm.
And not getting treatment. And so it's kind of a... sorry for the big breaks.
Well, are you looking for my reaction, or maybe you got a
yeah?
Jerry, Scott, what are your thoughts on that? Any response to that?
Well, I think there's that was a place. I think where the crossroads. I believe that is the crossroads. And I believe it's a very important part of this town. And I think it was best portrayed by Officer Wright?
Richards,
when he explained that he was not there for the citizens, and he was pointing at everybody on the bench, for you people, we are here for these businesses in this commercial zone. And I think that's when the light became a whole lot clearer to me that I was absolutely seeing fascism espoused by the police department, and I think we're ending up with spending zones. And if you're not spending fast enough, you need to get out. Whereas I believe that personally that citizens should be left alone, and we have enough criminal laws without creating these trumped up situations where we can persecute people, that if they concentrate on the criminal laws and actually going after criminals and being good peace officers instead of social cleansers, that our community would be a whole lot better off, and that everybody needs to be welcome there. If they're not a criminal, leave them alone.
What do you think, caller?
I think that it's a very important point that the social function of the police in society is to protect private property. And that's interesting to me that this Officer Richards isn't at all confused about his social function. And he's there, you know, just doing his job. My question, I guess, I've finally been able to formulate it, is with the growing number of
dispossessed and disenfranchised and just dissed people, poor people in the world. The number of these people growing. How long do you think this tactic of trying to invisibilize this sector or this segment of the population is going to, do you think, how long do you think this the business establishments are going to try and continue to invisibilize this group as it grows?
Jerry has an answer to that, or perhaps Scott. Go ahead, Jerry.
I think that this is going to continue until people stand up and make it clear to our city that it's just not acceptable that fascism isn't what we want to be recognized as. That fascism's literally when government operates in the business interest, not in the citizens. When we stand up and demand that our government operate in the citizens' interest, that's one of the reasons I encourage people to actually ask Sushi now if he does hand out swastikas, and that when they see fascist behavior happening in downtown Santa Cruz, maybe it's time that citizens let out a good Sig Heil, so that they let the establishment in this community know that they're elected by the citizens. As far as I know, businesses and commerce does not vote.
Although, interestingly enough, you know, the establishment in recent years of downtown business districts, and we do have one here in Santa Cruz, and the kind of the shoveling or shepherding of legislation through the Downtown Commission, which is, that's a public body, results in the passage of a lot of laws that are, that criminalize behaviors that most of us consider to be innocent, but that are, let's, should we say, considered less desirable by businesses, like, say, sitting down on the sidewalk. I know, for example, there's been a lot of harassment of people for sitting near buildings, and Food Not Bombs received a police surveillance team for the first time in some years. That's a report from Brian Kepke when it was serving food at, Cathcart and Pacific, because Food Not Bombs had moved out of the downtown area and was generally serving at the town clock and at San Lorenzo Park and at other places, but not downtown. Now, apparently, if they move back downtown, they're getting a special police protection, so to speak.
Hmm.
Just sort of a little update I heard on that. Any other thoughts, Scholar?
Yeah, I as a last and closing thought, it's a difficult position that I find myself in, because using the rhetoric of calling a shovel, and in fact labeling Matisse Selman and Ali Kha as fascists, and literally standing outside their enterprise and saying this is a fascist right here, it doesn't seem to be generating the kind of change and the magnitude of change that I would imagine that high frequency hyperbole would. You know, it's like calling somebody a terrorist is a lot more socially acceptable and high frequency than calling somebody a fascist. And so it's like, okay, so I can stand there and say, look, this is a very fascist thing that you're doing, but it doesn't affect the kind of change that I'm looking for. So that's a closing thought, and if you have any comments, I'll take them off the air. Thanks
okay.
for your time.
Thank you.
Yeah, my thought on that is when I stand there, when I go by Alibaba's and Sushi Now, I usually say loudly to the community around me, a boycott Alibaba's, Sushi Now, and New Leaf Market, by the way, Jerry. Mr. Eats at New Leaf Market. Because, and then I explain why, these people have privatized, I don't use the word fascist the way Jerry does, because I think it loses effectiveness when you overuse it. He'll say, oh, you're just a wingman, and I think Jerry's right, technically, that when the police operate on behalf of business interests, that is historically been a fascist position. But on the other hand, fascism also has another meaning in a society, which has to do with anti-Semitic beliefs, belief in authoritarian government, belief in the abrogation of the democratic process and a strong leader. And these are things I don't think either Alibaba or Sushi Now owners would say they support. So to call them fascists might confuse for me people as to what they're really doing, which is a fascist-like cooperation with the police, and which is also a privatization of the public areas without public process, and specifically, as Jerry and Scott have pointed out, a social cleansing of groups of people, young people, counterculture people, homeless people, a removal of people from the area, not because of specific behaviors that are objectionable, but because of who they are and how they're dressed. And there has been some concern about specific behaviors, but the reason that I say that that has not been the real reason here is because they had other options for dealing with those so-called objectionable behaviors, where those objectionable behaviors ranged from alleged harassment of women through comments, sexist comments, to, I don't know, spitting in, you're the infamous loogie man in the trash can, spitting in the trash can, but mainly it's being an uncongenial environment for a business to have a lot of young people there. Also, the claim was that there were kind of gang-like qualities. It wasn't a real gang, it wasn't gang colors, but it was a sort of an in-group that had taken over the area, and other people found themselves uncomfortable there, and Neil Coonerty always makes this a big deal that you want to move groups along on the sidewalk, or as a Sergeant Hennig used to put it, Hobo Hunter Hennig, as I called him, you want to cattle herd those folks along. The behaviors, the objectionable behaviors, could have been dealt with through codes of conduct, through guidelines, as indeed Celia Scott's guidelines cost $10,000, and they were put together by City Council mediators Daniel Rubin and Kim Hallinan back in 1995, but they were immediately dumped into the dustbin by then Mayor Rotkin and have not been revived, but they're still sitting there. I keep bringing them up to the great new progressive city council, and I can't get them to do anything about them or reconsider them. There are other ways to proceed with behavioral problems than engage in selective harassment and privatization of the area. Go ahead.
Yeah, and one of the things, I had a conversation with Matisse this last week. I think it was this last week, if not the week before. And he wanted to know how we solved this. And I believe very, very strongly that that any foundation for resolving all this needs to revolve around the State Unruh Act. And the stand in the fact that we have a state that recognizes that all citizens have equal rights, and that the signs we reserve the right to refuse service to anybody is actually a violation of the Unruh Act. And I think Santa Cruz really needs to start looking at the civil rights issues and trying to uphold the Unruh Civil Rights Act, and looking at our Supreme Court instead of trying to circumvent it looking for compliance. It's like the Chicago case where they've ruled on the move-along ordinance. It's unconstitutional when they keep passing these loitering laws. When loitering has been struck as unconstitutional, that when a Supreme Court justice writes that if the desire to stand is all the desire one would need, that the upholding of the civil rights things, I think, is where Santa Cruz needs to start.
I agree, and one way to go is with abolishing the downtown ordinances, and again, looking for, again, a specific way to deal with particular perceived problems, because obviously, the laws come into play when people feel that they're seeing behavior from conservative folks downtown. And I don't want to dismiss all of their concerns as simply being prejudice, paranoia, and unjustified sort of fascist leanings. I mean, some people have some concerns, and of course, there is the criminal law to deal with that, and I often refer people to that. But there's something in the middle that I think we also need. I think we could have mediation downtown of problems that arise. We have a street performer set of guidelines which say if you don't like the way someone's playing there, you're getting annoyed with their music, give them an hour and ask them to move on. It's not rigid. It varies. Regarding the Unruh Civil Rights Act, that has to do with the rights of the public to have access to public accommodations and businesses. It doesn't really have to do with the public sidewalk, private sidewalk. I mean, I suppose you could claim that any member of the public has the right to buy sushi and eat it in Matisse's now privatized little hunk of the sidewalk. And I think probably Matisse would agree with you. He would say anybody who buys sushi can sit down there and use it. In fact, we thought of using that as a technique whereby this guy came by and gave me $60 and said, here, have everybody buy sushi and sit there. The problem was I had a boycott that I committed myself. I couldn't really do that, but it wasn't a bad idea. Just have everyone buy a soda, fill up the area, and just try to use it to indicate that everyone had the right to be there. He feels everyone has the right to be there who's a customer of his. So it's not really a violation of the Unruh Civil Rights Act. What's a violation is they're taking public land that is to be used for other things than simply being one of Matisse or Alibaba's customers. And there aren't that many pieces of land downtown that have that area. And there are not many planters downtown where people can gather. And then when they do go together, we see what happens. They went across the street to the Pacific Cookie Company, and immediately the city pulled the benches, obviously, to get rid of them from there. What are your thoughts on this?
You know, I kind of disagree with you in a way. I think when we have the Downtown Business Association, which is incorporated, which is definitely an entity for the businesses that are trying to control the clientele downtown, that it's definitely a violation of State Unruh Act. I think when you and I were both asked we're instructed under threat of arrest, we'd be arrested if we went down back into Town Host Center. I think that's absolutely a violation of the State Unruh Civil Rights Act. I believe that there's been no prosecution. You know, I asked the I've asked people, is a willful violation of State Unruh Act a crime? I asked Joseph Onis with the Sheriff's Internal Affairs Department. He says, of course it is. And I don't believe this town ever has enforced an Unruh Civil Rights Act against any business, and it is a crime.
The problem there, Jerry, is that, you know, you can't really enforce it except through a civil lawsuit in terms of a criminal prosecution unless you run for DA and get in there in the DA's office, as far as I know. I mean, again, I could be wrong. There could be some obscure
I think there may be other ways. You know, the DA isn't the only avenue we have in this state. We have the grand jury. If the grand jury doesn't respond, then addressing the attorney general. If the attorney general doesn't respond, go on.
Well, again, those two avenues. The grand jury, I think actually that's an underused avenue for me. I recently got the grand jury forms. I haven't done anything with them. Come to the Huff meeting on Wednesday, and let's see if we can get some grand jury subcommittees going to get the grand jury interested in some of these concerns. The state attorney general, I went and talked to McPherson's aides, got the state attorney general forms, then heard that this only has to do with civil complaints. They don't take criminal complaints from citizens. They are simply, they will take civil complaints about consumer problems, so that's something to be considered. Regarding the hosts, that's, of course, the little office next to the Del Mar Theater, which is sort of a police substation. I call them the pests. They're the downtown eyes and ears of the police force, set up by, unfortunately, Catherine Byers, funded by the city, run around telling you not to sit here, not to sit there, and so they wear purple uniforms. Jerry and I were both barred from the host center, not because we gave the Nazi salute or anything of that sort, although we had a perfect right to do that, and in these public places, but because we were critics of what was going on, and I had actually taken a host to task, Terry Butler, I demanded that a criminal charge be leveled against him for excessive noise because he was broadcasting this offensive, well, not that offensive to me, but it was making it difficult for me to have people do petitioning. I mean, I was petitioning at this table to have people sign my petitions. Blasting through these speakers above New Leaf in order to get rid of a so-called undesirable element. And you and I, Jerry, were both barred from the host headquarters, but of course that had no meaning, and I've been in there since. But that's a business, see, that's inside a business, and that is a violation of the Unruh Civil Rights Act, though it's hard to prove because you have to prove that you are a specific class that is being denied access and that it is being done intentionally. Because you're a member of that class. I mean, I have not examined the case law in terms of how hard it is to prove, and I'd love to get more information on that. But I don't think that that's equivalent to the privatization of the sidewalk, because they are not going to, if they then excluded us from that, from the privatized area, and saying that we couldn't be there for one reason or another, once we had purchased something, then that would be a violation of the Unruh Civil Rights Act. But I go beyond that. I say the very privatization, even though it doesn't violate the Unruh Civil Rights Act, is a violation of, to me, the need to have public spaces accessible to all of us. It's not, I can't find a legal violation, but I find a moral violation there. What are your thoughts?
Well, I know, you know, going back to the Town Host Center, I call them the hosties with the mosties. You know, I tape recorded, I had a thug with a gun on telling me that if I came back in there, I'd be arrested. I wanted to know why, and I was told it was because Jeannie did not like me. Now, when you have government-sponsored, run, things set up to operate for the business, and you're being told that you're going to be arrested because somebody doesn't like you, I think those things really have to be addressed.
Yeah, and a city council, too, and they tell you that the Chris doesn't like you, and or Tim Fitzmaurice doesn't like you, and therefore you're barred from the meeting. That's another problem that comes up. Again, of course, they said that it was because of my unbecoming behavior, which they objected to, but it was that they didn't like that I was using a form of speech that reflected rather directly and dramatically on the way they were conducting city council. It indicated that I thought that they were acting in a fascist or Nazi-like manner. Let's take a musical break, and we'll be right back. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM.
Trackless time, fail and climb, you go your changing way. Could you not speak of all you've seen, the secrets you hold so well? It would take a vast eternity, your story's just to tell. Of the sails you filled, of ships you wrecked, of thousands of lives you've saved, of what you've seen on deserts mean and in palm tops' gentle wave, from mountains' ageless majesty to seas' tidally vast, of sweet lovers' sighs on summer's nights to vagabonds out on the tracks. As it would seem, you send me dreams that I never want to end, visions shared with my wandering friend, as seen by the eyes of the wind. Visions shared with my wandering friend, as seen by the eyes of the wind.
Yeah, it was Barbara Anderson, again from her album Evening's Bed, and that was Eyes of the Wind. Free Radio Santa Cruz is what you're tuned to, 96.3 FM. This is your free radio station. No commercials, no censorship, and no limits. So give us a call. Let us know what your thoughts are about these important issues. We're talking about government censorship of citizens. We're talking about the harassment of poor and homeless people downtown, and the kind of the double-barreled denial of rights at city council. Once people such as homeless advocates like myself raise issues, we get stigmatized, pariahized, and then evicted from city council meetings just simply based on the decorum whims of the former mayor, Fitzmaurice, and his new flunky, Christopher Crone. Am I being too harsh with poor Christopher? I don't think so. I think he really screwed up big time. In the studio with us are Jerry Henry and Scott Rhodes, activists in their own right. They give away food to people who are hungry. They attempt to assert civil rights, to restore civil rights to people who've lost them. Jerry has a series of criminal convictions against him at the Rancho Del Mar Shopping Center, where he for 4 years was trying to advise people, young people, and minister to their concerns there. He's been a longtime resident of lifetime resident of Aptos and Rancho Del Mar, and now he's forbidden from going in half of the shopping center. Is afraid
for three and a half years? No, it's been three
For the last 3.5 years. And he's, of course, been harassed here when he's asserted people's rights downtown and his own rights. Recently, I went and I discussed on Free Radio the issue of Jerry's appeal. He's appealed. He was convicted of trespass with intent to interfere with a business and with, I guess, disturbing the peace.
No.
What was the other charge?
Willfully entering lands to disrupt business.
Willfully entering lands to disrupt business and...
602J and 602-1, which is willfully...
Right, two trespass charges. So you actually the charge was thrown out against you of disturbing the peace. You won that one, surprisingly, at the local appeals level, in what was an extremely long misdemeanor case presided over by a former sometime judge, sometime city attorney, sometime DA, I don't know what where he gets all these jobs from, George Kovacevic, who was apparently involved in my just blocking the sidewalk case. He apparently advised Sergeant Butchie Baker when I was tabling in front of New Leaf Market that my table, even though it took up less than a sixth of the sidewalk, blocked the sidewalk. Again, a case that was dropped immediately, so the advice wasn't very good. They aren't pursuing it, and they aren't pursuing the case against Zoe Einbinder. They also arrested and took off in handcuffs, again, on a complaint of Matisse Selman. I'm not sure that Matisse Selman actually filed a complaint against her. That's an interesting question. We don't really know. That could have been Sergeant Baker's initiative, and that would be interesting to look into. But you've been appealing your cases, Jerry, and I guess where have we gotten with that? A local appeal before the judges threw out a couple of the charges, but kept how many are currently still active?
There's two active cases, one 602.1 and 602J. The case is going to actually, it's very, very interesting because it's very much like downtown. It's going to revolve between the words premises and lands. And in my case, they tried to extend the business's authority outside the premises onto the lands, the common sidewalk.
This is Gottschalk's at the Rancho Del Mar Shopping Center, if you're wondering where we're talking about.
Well, it's not just Gottschalk's. It's the Santa Cruz Roasting Company. It's the Sheriff's Department. It's the liquor store that's no longer there, Rancho Liquors. And that's one of the reasons the privatization of the sidewalks has been so strong within me, because they're trying to say that the word premises extends out to the lands. And I think this is what they're trying to say with their 10-foot ordinance from the windows. This is these businesses have this barrier that seems to extend past their premises onto private lands, public access areas, or their public lands, and they're trying to privatize it. And I just don't think it's a good thing to do. The local appellate division refused to deal with the 602 cases. They have denied to certify it, and now we are on our way appealing to the Sixth Circuit. And hopefully this will be resolved sometime, and we'll know what the words land and premises actually do mean.
Where are we in this process? Do you have another court date coming up, and where are we located here?
Right now we're just leaving the local court and on our way to the Sixth Circuit Court with a writ of certiorari or certification.
So how long now are you'll have to continue to be barred from these areas? If these convictions are thrown out, does that mean you can simply return and do what you were doing?
Yes, I believe if these were thrown out, I'd be able to return.
Wow, and I guess you're hoping that that's going to be the case fairly soon. When do you expect you'll get your? I mean, the Sixth Circuit is a horrible court. I don't expect you much of a positive ruling. How are you feeling on that?
Well, I would hope that they would deal with it. If they don't deal with it, then we're going to be appealing to the higher courts, and. I think it's an awful waste of time, money, energy.
How much money do you think the city actually spent, and how many pages of transcript and how many days were taken up with this trial of you for being outside the business, which they now claim that they now own the sidewalk? I guess you were sitting on your car or something? Or?
Yes.
Yeah.
Drinking a cup of Roasting Company coffee.
Uh-oh. Well, that could have been it. Too much of that coffee can lead to all kinds of behavior. But how much did it all cost, and how long did it all take?
Well, we've been at this. George Kovacevic was bound and determined that he was going to prosecute me, and there was actual four court cases that spanned out over 4 years. The last case, when they actually tried me as being a public nuisance, the trial was 13 days.
Estimated
$50,000. Yeah, the judge estimated that just that trial was $50,000. I know the sheriff's department has an estimate of just 10 or 12 times the police officers responding, having a cost of $35,000. I've been told by the public defender's office that the bill's well over $100,000. I believe we're headed up into the hundreds of thousands now that this case is... has cost, and I think it has very little positive effect, that it's really a waste of money. George Kovacevic explained in the trial on the record that he took the case because every other district attorney turned it down because they were afraid that they would be charged as a public nuisance.
Jerry, isn't this primarily a case where a few business people... a manager at Gottschalk's, the owner of the coffee roasting company, or even a manager of the coffee roasting company, and maybe the people who run the sheriff's substation, these are three little businesses all in a row, and perhaps the liquor store, are trying to just get you excluded, almost like a turf war? Isn't that kind of what it is?
Well, first, you know, it's very much like downtown. They were attacking the kids. They were issuing tickets. We have tapes of Claudia explaining how...
Claudia, again, is who?
Is the manager of Gottschalk's, how she explained that the children were just going to be moving along because it wasn't good for her business. I think it's the same dangers we're facing downtown.
Hey, caller, you're on the air with Jerry Henry, Scott Rhodes, and Uncle Robert.
Hi, sorry, this is actually Amy, and I want to just ask Robert about how I can meet you later.
Uh-oh. Hey, well, Amy, the two of us can... Actually, this is Amy Courtney, the notorious bandista of the bed sheets. You're the one who has been caught storming the barricades, and actually, but unfortunately, I guess you haven't put up any bed sheets lately about ending the war, huh?
Precisely. That's the story.
Oh, boy. The show gets over at 1:30, and you going to be around? How about meeting at the...
I'm just running a little bit late is the thing, so...
All right.
Do you want to just call me when you're done with the show?
Okay, you're going to be at home.
Yeah.
Fair enough. Any additional hope from the... What's our timeline on the... You won the case, we thought, but then Caltrans appealed, so you cannot put up your banner next to the... So the flags, are the flags still up on the overpasses or not?
Well, again, what I said last week is, and I think is the most, like, you know, active thing about the whole deal is that what we need or what would be good is if other people start putting up their own bed sheets or whatever sheets and whatever info, particularly alongside American flags or anything else that's on the overpasses. I think that at this point, that's the most effective way to get a message to Caltrans and to the state and to our community that, you know, it's not just Cassandra Brown and Amy Courtney who share this idea that maybe we should be thinking about this stuff before we go blowing up a whole bunch of people, but, you know, that there's a lot of people out there who...
Hey, we got a lot of bombs
it.
We need to use here, Amy.
It's true, I know. We're making more all the time, huh?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it
business.
Is a business, you know.
I mean, you
may be accused of interfering with business if you keep this up, right? Like Jerry.
Oh,
Henry,
you flatter me.
Well, yeah. All right, well, look, I'll give you a call at the end of the show.
Okay, great.
And how can people, if they want to get more information about how to properly affix a bed sheet to an overpass, can they call you or should they just call the Huff line? Or?
Call the Huff line or they can email AECOURT. @hotmail.com.
And the Huff line, of course, is 423-HUFF, 423-4833.
Great.
Thanks, Amy.
Yeah, thanks, Robert.
All righty.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, gosh. I think this calls for a musical interlude, and one that's particularly pertinent. This is music you've heard in the last couple of shows, but why not repeat it?
Germany was having trouble, what a spectacle story. Needed a new leader to restore its former glory. Well, where was he? Where could that man be?
the Germans go into your dance. I was born in Dusseldorf, and that is why they call me Rolf.
Don't be stupid, be a smarty. Come and join the Nazi party.
That was the first half of Springtime for Hitler. Actually, the song continues. But, hey, we got the real thing in Santa Cruz in terms of our own repression. It hasn't got those colorful swastikas and those big concentration camps. But you see a process of people being excluded, of people being immiserated, of people facing fear simply to express themselves. And most important, issues that should be on the public agenda, at least city council, are not. That's because the folks who should be there meeting the mandates that they got at election time aren't doing it, and those who try to remind them of it are getting excluded and threatened. I want to thank Jerry Henry and Scott Rhodes for coming in the studio here and being with us today. Any concluding remarks, guys?
Thanks for inviting us to talk here, and I really think that until we quit criminalizing a class of people and deeming them as undesirable in our society, we won't get past any of these issues. I think that's issue number one, and I think it definitely needs to stop in Santa Cruz before we do anything else.
Well, you're both invited to come to a press conference that I'm trying to put together, whereas I've mentioned already on this show that once I determine whether they're going to prosecute me, if they're going to prosecute me under this, calling a mayor a fascist, in essence, through a silent gesture and an arrest for that, then probably the press conference will mention, you know, that we're going to be fighting that case, but also suing under the case of blocking the sidewalk, which happened earlier last month, where I was arrested simply for, again, exercising First Amendment rights, and then additionally this matter of being excluded from the host center. Not that anyone really wants to spend much time there, but you should have the right to enter these buildings, which are involve quasi-public agencies. And when the police enforce the preferences of some bureaucrats there, that you're not allowed to be there, even though you've done nothing wrong, that's another civil rights violation. It's important to call them on this, and I hope that you will be able to show up when we get this, kind of make this a public news event, because I think that we're not the only ones who've suffered these kinds of exclusionary actions. I'm afraid that it's much more widespread, but the people think that, you know, they're the odd man out, they're the oddball, somehow they're at fault, and that, of course, is what classically divides us all, the feeling that it's not a general policy we're suffering under, but somehow some fault of our own. Thanks for being with us, guys.
Thank you,
come
Robert.
Back soon.
Thank
and
you.
Get rid of those cigarettes, for heaven's sake.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. All right. Well, Free Radio Santa Cruz is now moving on to another topic here, at least my section of Free Radio Santa Cruz. I was down south a couple weeks ago and went through Santa Barbara. And Santa Barbara activist Nancy McCready and her irascible sometime companion, Bob Hansen, I call her Nef-Said Nancy and Beaming Bob, gave a report on what's happening in Santa Barbara. We're going to hear that now.
We're talking with Nancy McCready. We're in Santa Barbara. It's about 7:05, and Caro's Restaurant on February 28, 2002. With me is Becky Johnson and the interminably interruptive Bob Hansen. Hey, Nancy.
Hello, Robert.
And Nancy, you're on a new task force. What is this silly task force?
Actually, it's to work out.
To delay the whole business of the recreational vehicle deal so they can fob it off for another 4 months, right?
Yeah, basically. They want to see what they can do to criminalize us further. And so we have three RV dwellers on the task force to see if we can't stop that and gear them towards a more positive solution, such as a motor housing park in the city of Santa Barbara.
The county body?
It's got city only.
Oh, city only.
City only.
So the county's already done some passing. What did they pass?
They passed their laws where they want churches and nonprofits to open up their parking lots.
Anybody but the government.
Three RVs in each place.
Santa Cruz hasn't. It does very little.
However, no churches have wanted to come forward.
Oh, dear.
So, yeah, basically.
Well, after all, that would involve Christian behavior, wouldn't it?
Well, two or three would take care of nine people. Yeah, two or three people. Two or three people would be taken care of, you know, basically.
It should be said that the city, at least, has not enforced or gotten this new law, which involves criminalizing parking RVs anywhere in town, right? Which instead there are some limits on parking RVs.
Oh, what they did was take that aspect of the ordinance that they want to create and put it over on the task force.
But at the moment, at least they didn't immediately zip through some crap which would have not criminalized just for parking an RV.
Basically, it would have given us parking tickets, which is harder to fight in the courts. And four or five of them would really theoretically
boot your vehicle and away you go.
They can take your vehicle. And
Glenn Maurer has successfully fought on behalf of a number of people using different things such as reasonable doubt and technical problems, but also, most importantly and recently, the necessity defense for people living in their vehicles, even though the police and the city attorney have said, oh, well, wait a minute, we have the mission shelter that you can go to. I want to say anything about that?
Yeah, I do, because now the appellate courts have ruled that they cannot force you out of your RVs and into the shelters.
Right, and that is even stymied dear Bob Hansen's ticket here. Bob, a master of ticketry, so to speak, who has, since Bob is filibustering and won't talk unless I interview him in Japanese, which I'd like to do, but I don't believe in, you know, flouting my knowledge of many languages in front of everyone, you know, konnichiwa. So what happened with Bob's ticket, Nancy?
Which one, on his camping ticket? His camping ticket is still up for court date. He
was dismissed.
He's not guilty. Oh, mine was dismissed, and his other one was dismissed. Now he has a new one to go to.
Camping ticket. Does this mean that the police are indeed returning to their old tricks in spite of the necessity defense success?
Of course. If you talk to them wrong or something like that, and they don't like you, or maybe they just want to take on a case, whatever, they'll give you a ticket. No problem.
So did Bob get a ticket for essentially the same thing that he did before?
Basically a camping ticket violation, yeah.
We're talking camping meaning sleeping in a vehicle.
Oh, I would imagine that's it.
During the nocturnal hours?
During the nocturnal hours.
Shocking. Were you there, Nancy?
No.
I don't know. I was asleep, wasn't I? Yeah.
So, Bob, did you deserve this ticket?
No.
I'm not quite sure what that means. Did anyone translate that now?
Also, C. Yes. Okay.
So when does your court date come up for this, Bob?
Also.
And what does that mean?
It means that he has to go to court and plead not guilty, and then the Committee for Social Justice will take his case. they have told me to tell him.
Who has a ticket tomorrow for sitting on the sidewalk? Is that right?
Yes.
And what is there some law in Santa Barbara about sitting on the sidewalk? I understand it was passed back, sort of a copycat law from Santa Cruz, which we passed first,
yes.
I want to point out, you know, where they're foistest with the mostest, with the meanest and the cleanest.
Well, you know, Tempe, Arizona threw that law out because they proved that when they made that law that they were gearing towards the homeless, they were selecting the homeless to make that law.
Nonsense.
No.
I'm really trying to be civil here. We have bums like this.
They proved it that they did this because the homeless were sitting on the sidewalk and they had to throw it out. So if we did the same thing on that sleeping law, that sit-down law, we'd have
Arizona,
our...
Arizona, California, different
Arizona, court. Yeah.
And
but
I doubt it was a federal case. I suspect it was probably a state case.
It was just a state case. It was actually... I don't know. I think
I
it was
don't
a...
Think sitting laws have been thrown out. Yeah, actually, they have. They were thrown out in Santa Cruz, but then they came back with more limited sitting laws, which are currently in force. There was a law you can't sit down anywhere on the sidewalk. That was thrown out because of... I think it was... It was not because there wasn't a warning involved, because there was supposedly no due process.
I thought it was a time, place, manner thing, and so they had left no place.
You could sit on benches, and sitting is not considered to be an expressive act. It's considered to be, you know, utilitarian kind of behavior. It's not like a First Amendment kind of process. But, you know, instead, the courts found there was a defective provision where there was no warning, or the warning was gave the police officer too much discretion. Anyway, but you don't... There's a sitting ban in Santa Barbara, I know, that was passed, because I think I wrote a story about it about 5 years ago.
Yeah.
And has it been used widely, or is it still being used?
It still gets used, but very few people actually sit on the sidewalk anymore.
Let's call our listeners, Nancy, who you are. You are...
I'm just Nancy McCready, the newspaper lady, and I've been...
Nancy McCready, the newspaper lady. I like that.
Yes, that's what I call myself.
Word, until you lost your job in August.
I still do newspapers. I got jobs with newspapers.
Who's raised a family.
Yeah.
You have your biggest baby here at the table.
Yes, my biggest baby is sitting over, saying...
Japanese.
Yes, also. And in actuality, they don't say also. They say shishi for thank you, and bakatari, which means a bad word, and, you know, other things.
More importantly, you've been involved, my lights, in homeless civil rights activity here in Santa Barbara, as has your main enfant terrible here, the notorious Beaming Bob Hansen, who's... He's going to court tomorrow. What's that about?
He sat on the sidewalk.
He sat on the sidewalk. Now, is it true that he had laid down on the sidewalk the week before in the same place?
Yeah, not only that, but he had a rip in his pants, and it was towards the graphic for them to handle. Yes.
So the homophobia of the cops sort of leaped into play.
Yeah. He was sick for the shelter because of that, too.
He has ripped pants.
Because of his ripped pants, yes.
It's becoming a little less clear as a First Amendment issue.
And you had those Catholic staff women, you know, that were just getting
overly aroused.
I don't know, probably, but they were too gross about it.
Well, there is a public decency issue here. Bob has never been a stickler for decency. His porta potty bathroom protest.
Bob and I play bad cop and good cop usually in our activist roles.
It's a great theater of Santa Barbara.
Like, I'm not an activist. I'm an advocate, and he's the activist.
But he doesn't speak English, Bob. When are you going to learn English? Problem. So tomorrow at 3:30, Bob, tell us what happens with a sitting ticket. Are those usually found? Is Talmadge...
Oh, well, when you come back Saturday, you'll be able to get the results.
No, I don't speak Japanese. I can't. We're going to need a translator for this one, I can see. So, what else is happening in terms of camping tickets? One of the big questions I had, and that Glenn wasn't really able to answer, Glenn Maurer, the public defender, who's doing these tickets successfully, quite impressively, it's a minority of the people in Santa Barbara who are homeless who have RVs or cars. Most people are, you know, outside. And what's happening with them?
Basically, every once in a while, I don't know, they're mostly left alone. I have some friends who sleep on the beach, and they come in every once in a while, give them tickets. And some of those people don't even bother going to the Committee for Social Justice for help. They just let them go to warrant, and they go to jail, and then they go back out again. And they spend maybe a night in jail. Pay off their warrant.
How many people do you estimate are outside as compared to people in their vehicles?
There's not that really that many. You have a lot of the people I know live in our cars.
Is that because you have a select knowledge of people here, or is it because that you actually...
Well, there's a lot of...
there are less people who live in outside than in their cars.
I call a lot of my friends, Border Brothers, and they're out there. They're sleeping out there underneath the bridges and stuff like that. And then there's some camps that go up towards the zoo and past the zoo and over by the duck pond, and some are in Montecito, and every once in a while Caltrans goes in, takes their stuff and cleans up, and then they go right back and make new camps. So, I mean, it's just perpetuating, you know. I mean, there's no organized system of things anymore, really. We're just organizing the RVs right now because right now this is the pet project of the city, basically, and we're up there, you know, we're not going to let them do us in, you know. I mean, we're just...
The pet project, I understand, is a sort of two-directional deal. One is this attempt to criminalize people through parking tickets, which would circumvent the necessity defense.
Yeah, well,
defense.
I had a meeting with the mayor right here and told her that's a really bad idea.
Mayor Bloom. Is it Mary or Marty?
Marty Bloom. Well, it's a really bad idea. And she says, well, everybody has to pay some kind of rent. And I says, that's not rent.
Right.
Rent is when you go into a place like a motor housing parking, you pay rent. Yes. That's what you need to do, yes. And so, basically, they're happy about the idea of a motor housing park. They just need some nonprofit to start it. They need a nonprofit to get it started.
Well, you've had success.
So Homes on Wheels is going nonprofit. We're going to go nonprofit.
Well, that takes about a year, last I heard of that. Going
what, to get on a nonprofit?
Unless you have a nonprofit cover organization, which in which case it's not you.
If we have to have a nonprofit cover organization, we'll have one in a second. If we need to get a nonprofit started fast, we'll just go to Lois Capps.
Okay. All I know is I had heard it takes quite a while to do that, but I know nothing. I'm really ignorant of that.
The money to get the $1 million liability and go for it.
Homes on Wheels has been around, I know, for quite a while. I came down here in the mid-90s, and you guys were fighting this posted signs under the bridges. It was driving away vehicles then, saying you couldn't park there. What happened in that stroke?
Well, basically, what the city does is whenever there's a lot of problems with the RVs, they change the signs around, you know, to save money. They take the signs away from one area of town and they put it in another area. Okay, so everybody goes to the place where there's no signs, and so in actuality, it's just a way of moving the complaints from one part of the city to the other.
Well, you take a sort of a mellow view here. In other words, whereas I think up in Santa Cruz we'd be ranting and raving about this, you're saying first of all that there's not really, I mean, people sort of move ahead of the problem, and you know that when the new signs come in, they just go to the old places. But isn't there a continuing hardship? But isn't this a continuing, like yourself?
Not
you said
everybody
you.
Everybody does it. A lot of people just stay in one spot and don't move at all.
Right.
And they gather together. Okay, like the parking lots on the beach. They stay long periods of time, 3 months, without the police coming in and bothering them. And then the police come in and clean them out. Just communities of RV people. And they group together in a parking lot. And
now the city's trying to legalize this in some way, or?
Not the parking lots. They just want the nonprofits and the churches to come forward.
Wasn't there some move on the church, on the beach parking lots, the attempt to criminalize that or make it more difficult?
Yeah, they also
denying permits.
Over to the, yeah, they've denied permits to the RVers.
Has that been sent over to your task force, or has that been passed?
No, that hasn't been passed.
So there has been a tightening in Santa Barbara in that respect.
They have passed the they're not going to give RV holders permits to park on the beach anymore.
Now, you yourself, are parked in one of these places with a formerly with a permit, now without?
I'm basically parked in a no man's land, I think.
A woman's land as
no,
well?
No, yeah, no man's land. Dwight Murphy Field has had a long history of being a 24-hour recreational facility. 3 years ago, they took the sign that said that away. But it was historically, if you read up about it, was a campground for the military during World War II and whatever. So that's why
I'm here to go fight Osama bin Laden, and you're planning to get together.
I'd like to go to Afghanistan and help out. I teach people how to grow crops. But so they were
growing good opium over there now.
Oh, whatever. Yeah, good poppies. But the thing is that no, I think that Dwight Murphy is called a field rather than a park, you know, because of that reason. So historically, where we're parking tonight is really a no man's land. There are no parking tickets. There are no signs that say you can't camp there.
Now, have they? So this law that bars camping in parking lots and doesn't allow parking lot permits, I'm not quite sure what the law says, but the law passed by the city council recently does not extend to where you're sleeping.
Yeah, even if you did have a parking lot permit, it wouldn't allow you to park there at night.
Where you're sleeping.
Anywhere. So you see, you have your parking lots at night are all closed between the hours of either 12 and 6 or 2 to 4 in the mornings. You can read them.
What's the significance of what they passed?
What they passed is what they just don't want people to park all day long on the beachfront without paying the money, so they're taking away their permit. See, the permit was $60 a year, or $120 if you were over 20-footer.
Right.
Okay, so you would put two stickers in your window, and you could go to the beach every day, all day long, and at night, at 2 o'clock in the morning, you would get out, go someplace, go have coffee, come back at 6, okay, and stay there again.
We would go out and have coffee, and we'd go move out of the park.
Move out of the park, go to sleep, and then go back to the beach. Whatever. I mean, some people wander around for 2 hours. We wouldn't do that, but other people wander or go over to hot spots and have coffee.
I know, but in general, people
moved out of
the parking lot, slept, and at 6 o'clock came back to the parking lot. And for $60, $70 a year, they had beachfront parking.
So were their parking permits all revoked? Is that what's happened? Or?
They are no longer going to sell tickets. Their beach parking lots to the RV.
The right plan.
How many people does this impact?
About 30 or 40.
30 or 40.
Yeah, along the whole beachfront. Yeah.
Now, was this a real problem, or was this one of these perceptual problems?
It's a perceptual problem. All of it is a perceptual problem.
It's a real problem.
It's a real problem because people would even look at that and go, what is that, an RV park? I mean, you know, 20 vehicles out there. So
it is a perceptual problem because people think that the RVs are dangerous to the parking lots.
But don't they, in fact, provide more protection? I mean, if the people are there...
That's another perceptual idea.
That's what I've always thought. Yeah. You know, the blind beggar on the corner is protection.
I mean, you know, park, run around, and spend money, not to have about 20 vehicles take up about almost a fifth of the parking lot. That's all.
Yeah, but see, they view the RVers as not residences of the city. That's what your problem is. These people are residents.
Now, Peter Maron, who's written a number of articles, and has been, I assume, is also on this committee, your task force, maybe.
He might be.
He might be on the task force, but he's written a lot about this issue. He said that, you know, there's a perception growing in Santa Barbara among officials that affordable housing is a vehicle these days for poor people.
A vehicle?
In other words, there isn't any affordable housing for the foreseeable future except a vehicle.
No, that's just about right. Yeah.
Is this perception growing? I mean, is this view gaining currency among city officials, not just among the homeless?
Yeah, it is. I think so. I think that psychologically is growing towards. I mean, even the middle class is finding it difficult to live here now. So it's pretty scary because the amount of wages that you get, the hourly wages, cannot even possibly get you your dream home in this community anymore. So you're really looking at some really
after
social upheaval. You know, it's getting worse.
really well.
Well, let's see what it's doing here is it's binding up the freeway and traffic because people have to go outside this community to live, and they have to come back here and work. And a freeway that used to be cleared by 8 o'clock in the morning is now cleared at 9:30 in the morning because of the fact that we have bumper-to-bumper traffic every morning coming into Santa Barbara for people who go to work.
It's all for the best, Nancy.
Oh, sure.
Now,
the
question that I guess I have is, after the necessity defense of victories by Glenn Maurer and the Ridley Cooper cases, which found that people in vehicles could not simply be fobbed off into missions or ticketed unless there were some real alternatives, and apparently, they felt that the judges, that was a Commissioner Talmadge, I think it was Commissioner Talmadge, who claimed that they had real alternatives, but didn't specify what they were, or felt that the mission was the alternative and that was sufficient. I guess even the Winter Armory shelter isn't considered to be a real alternative in these cases, or is it?
No. I don't mean the
Winter Armory shelter. I mean that's what it used to be. But the winter shelter, the new shelter that was built downtown.
You can't tell somebody in an RV that they can go anywhere except for where they are.
Right. Which is kind of radical. I mean, that's the first city where this has happened, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it's really cool.
And yet, a police officer came to your door two nights ago and woke you up in the middle of the night.
Yeah.
Tell me about that.
And he said there was a complaint, and believe, of us camping.
Well, wait a minute. But you're not... Oh, I see. So they're claiming, even though the necessity defense holds... Oh, this is what you were saying, that you were given a kind of an archaic warning.
Until you move.
Right.
If you get a complaint. And I just told the officer I wasn't going to move.
I see.
Because I had to get up at 2 hours and go to work and drive 260 miles. And I didn't feel like getting up right there. And he says, well, whose vehicle? And I said, Bob Hansen's. And he says, where is he? And I said, well, I think he went down to the film festival. And I said, I don't have the keys. He does. Which is a lie.
Note that well, listeners.
And it just so turns out that Bob was driving up at the same time, and I went back to sleep, and Bob got a couple warning notices, and he looked at the cop, and he said,
What did you say, Bob, after the ASO? What did he say?
I believe that he got two warning flyers on his vehicles, and marking the tires, and Bob looked at the police officer. He says, well, did you give that van over there one and over here one? And the cop says, later.
Oh.
And we stayed there the next night, too.
Name the police officer was?
Don't know. Don't care. I was just looking out the window telling him.
But didn't Bob get a ticket previously that was thrown out?
Thrown out, too. I got a camping ticket, too.
And why? Was it a similar ticket or was it a different ticket?
And I went down, gave mine to Glenn, and by the time I got all dressed up, got my hair done, and got my suit on, and walked into the city attorney, came running down, said, we're not prosecuting your case. I didn't even get to go in.
What was your ticket for?
Camping.
What were you camping for?
In your RV.
When did you get a ticket?
I had a ticket.
How long ago?
That was well back.
So the currently, however, Bob's problem is inappropriate butt behavior on State Street, right?
Or
butt exposure, as the case may be.
Well, I'm sure that Mr. Hahn is going to possibly tell the judge about the week previous, too. In order to get it.
What penalties do you face, Bob, if you get convicted? So, in other words, even for lying and sitting, it's both, lying down and sitting, it's both
$54.
$54. Now, did you actually get convicted of the lying ticket?
No.
And how did you beat the rap?
I got up.
Ah, so he was warned in this case, but he was not actually ticketed.
Yeah, no, he wasn't. No.
Well, Bob is notorious for some of his antics. For example, in the past, he's been engaging in,
you're notorious. Attempting to... I could even say before you, say before me. I would kind of make a conversation and talk in Spanish.
For having a hot ladle soup. A ladle. I mean, come on.
And I may have gone on a bit too long with that interview in Santa Barbara with activists Bob Hansen and Nancy McCready down there. They are longtime workers for homeless civil rights and homeless themselves. They've been doing it for 20 years. They walked to Washington, D.C. At least Bob did all the way across the country in 1988 from Santa Barbara to Washington, D.C. And they've also been involved in, oh, God, Bob must have been in dozens, if not scores, of arrests for standing up for the rights of poor people around him. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. I'm Robert Norris. We're coming into the last 20 minutes of Bathrobe's Piers Broadsides.
When I'm walking down the streets, never know who I might meet. Town to town, you just never know. But in each town, when things are same, with us for a while. You're here to make sure your shopping experience is enjoyable and keep the riffraff in line. The hall monitors of the Pacific Garden Mall obey the rules and you'll have a good time. Just obey the rules, you'll have a good time. Well, they got them cute little radios, pretty green shirts as well. They're the eyes and ears of the Santa Cruz police to protect and serve and sell. Yeah, there's the hospitality patrol here to make sure you enjoy your stay. A green-shirted hospitality Nazis, if you ain't got the cash, you better go away. But they'll make sure your shopping experience is wonderful. They'll keep those dirty street people in line. Eyes and ears of the Santa Cruz police, obey the rules and you'll have a good time. So obey the rules and you'll have a good time. It seems that our hosts have been pretty damn inhospitable, especially since the street is home to me. They come into my house, order me around with no badge and no authority. They're the hospitality patrol here to make sure you wear a smile. They're the hospitality Nazis who spend your money for a while. They'll make sure your shopping experience is freaking wonderful. Yeah, they'll keep us dirty street people in line. The hall monitors the Pacific Garden Mall. Obey the rules and you'll have a good time. Well, though you just make it passing through, remember what I sang to you. Your hometown, yes, everywhere, with this money to spend, they are there. Look around, I'm sure you'll see our gentrified reality. Spend your money day by day, our hosts are here to guide the way. Yeah, there's the hospitality patrol here to make sure you enjoy your stay. The green-shirted hospitality Nazis, if you ain't got the cash, you better go away. Yeah, they'll make sure your shopping experience is freaking wonderful. Street people in line. the Pacific Garden Mall. It's here in Santa Cruz. Just obey the rules and you'll have a good time. Obey the rules and you'll have a good time. We'll call the cops over and they'll beat on you for a while.
But you know we're out here fighting crime. Yeah, right.
So it's about 7:15 on March 2nd, 2002. I'm in the Denny's. Is this the only Denny's in town here in Santa Monica?
Yeah.
It is. The sole Denny's. You were saying virtual lodging for the last 2 or 3 years here?
Yeah, if you're homeless, for me here in Santa Monica, sleeping on the street and trying to find affordable housing, I found a cup of coffee at Denny's to be the most affordable 2 hours of housing I can get.
And I guess you're a man who's been a Santa Monica regular for how long now?
I've been homeless. I've been a resident in the west side of Los Angeles for 20 years, and I've been homeless since 1992. I've been homeless on the street in Santa Monica for the last 4 years.
Sure.
You know, Robert, one thing I'd like to say on this subject of Denny's, though, since we started out with that, there are not too many late-night coffee shops in Santa Monica. There's about 3 or 4. But one thing about going to Denny's is you know that when you do pay your $2 for a cup of coffee, that you can have the satisfaction of roughly $2. You can have the satisfaction of knowing that probably 75% of that is going to pay for some civil rights justice to the various plaintiffs who've been discriminated against by Denny's restaurants around the country.
Right. Well, that's, I'd say more like 3%, but maybe you're right. You're talking about, of course, the fact that Denny's has discriminated against African-American people in different cities. And actually, we had a potential lawsuit for homeless people back in 1989 in Santa Cruz in Denny's when they refused to serve a homeless woman a cup of coffee, and all of us went in and did a sit-in and so forth. But, you know, Denny's is only a small part of the Santa Monica scene. Last night I slept in a vehicle here in Santa Monica at a place you suggested, a private parking lot about a block away from Denny's. But what's the situation for people sleeping? Well, first of all, was I illegal in so doing so? Could I have been cited by a police officer for a violation of some municipal code?
Only if the property owner complained.
It's only for trespass?
Correct.
You know, in Santa Cruz we have a law that would have made that illegal unless they had the written permission of the business owner, and there was only 2 vehicles on that lot parked there overnight in a similar situation. So apparently your laws are more liberal than Santa Cruz, if that's the case.
That's a Santa Cruz municipal code that they passed?
Yeah, there was a municipal code that was passed in 99 that allows 2 vehicles per business parking lot, 3 vehicles per church parking lot, with the written permission of the owner to sleep there. There's some dispute now as to whether, actually now that's only for 72 hours in the case of the business, but unlimited period of time in the case of the church, again with the permission of the church. You can't do it in a tent, you can't sleep outside on church property, even with the permission of the church. There's a 72-hour limit on all sleeping on all private property where it's allowed. And it's only allowed in backyards and fenced-in side yards and front yards that are not visible from the street. That's the rule in the Santa Cruz city limits with the municipal code called 6.36, the camping ordinance.
Thank the Great Spirit that Santa Monica hasn't gone to that step yet.
What is the law in Santa Monica regarding vehicles and sleeping in vehicles on public property? I recall there was a rather unusual liberal law in the 80s written by Bob Myers, the city attorney, who was eventually kicked out by the city council for being too nice to homeless people. And then there was a change in the law that happened in 1994 when a massive right-wing effort to criminalized homeless people happened and sort of frightened the city council to passing some preemptive legislation. Do you know what the current legal status for homeless people is here in Santa Monica in vehicles?
Fairly well, yeah. Since just last year, the drive was spearheaded by the police department of Santa Monica to kick everybody in the city living in a vehicle out of town. And just to give you the context on that, there's 86,000 people, roughly, in Santa Monica. In this town of 86,000 people, 10 square miles, the city police department found out that we had a overwhelming flood of 70 people in the entire city living in their vehicle. But that apparently for this wealthy tourist city is just too much. So they tried to kick us all out. And to answer your question, we found out that the current state of the law in Santa Monica is that it is illegal to sleep in a vehicle for more than 30 minutes in a residential zone. And there's four residential zones in the city. What the law, for some reason, has the oversight of not mentioning any of the other zones, mixed use, light industrial zones in the city. And
what percentage of the city is that four residential zones make up?
I haven't looked at that. I couldn't tell you, but I would guess
half the city or less.
I would say at least half, maybe three quarters, because 80% of the city of Santa Monica is renters, and it's a lot of residences here.
So, and in fact, this is the Myers Law of the 80s that protected homeless people. In essence, it said, A, you can sleep anywhere you want. It's non-residential in a vehicle. You can't be bothered. And B, if you sleep in a vehicle in a residential area, you still have half an hour's residential. Is there an amount of time? It has to be essentially on complaint by a resident, or no? It can be just be a police officer noticing you there for more than half an hour.
Just a police officer noticing you in Santa Monica.
Does that mean, in fact, that people sleeping in their vehicles in industrial zones are not bothered, or are police using other means to go after them?
There's some reports of people being bothered. I don't know of anybody who's actually gathered up in the city numbers or complaints. We haven't, the homeless newspaper, we haven't been able to
really change the name of the homeless paper.
Yeah, we haven't really been able to dig into that. We get a lot of anecdotal reports, and nobody has decided that they wanted to stand up and get to the bottom of that issue. Last year when we fought off this push by the police department.
To change this law?
They tried to. And we held a series of community meetings where we homeless people rallied together, and we pointed out that while they had attacked the city council with this gigantic presentation claiming a flood of over 200 complaints every year of homeless people sleeping in their vehicles, we pointed out, well, with 70 people sleeping in their vehicles 365 days a year, that amounts to about 250 or 25,000 potential complaints that could be generated if just one person on an entire street wanted to complain about that, quote, nasty homeless person or lazy shipless quote.
Or a genuine problem such as dumping trash on the street or being abusive or parking in front of your driveway or some such thing. That would be a legitimate concern of a resident.
Yeah. So out of over 25,000 times a year, where there might be the potential for a legitimate complaint to be completed, only 250 amounts to less than 1% of the time that one person on an entire block complained. And so we pointed out that there is no massive outcry in the city.
But there was a massive outcry in the police department officials of them.
That's what emerged, yes.
Now, what about the city council? Did they vote simply to shelve this or not even to take it up? Or what was the what were the dimensions of the discussion there?
The issue was brought up, they used the tactic that a lot of politicians, when they don't want to deal directly with an issue or stand up for their principles on the issue, they sent it back to committee.
I see. So it never came out of committee, actually. It died in committee?
Yes. Yeah. But it's sort of like Dracula, you know. Anytime things can get dark, you know, there's nothing keeping the vampires from coming back out of the coffin. Is there a plan to attack us in the
sort
middle
of, like,
of the night?
The Patriot Act, that sort of thing.
Exactly.
Now, in 1994, I guess I was misremembering, it wasn't people in vehicles that got the shaft. It was homeless people elsewhere. Isn't there a law that criminalizes homeless people from sleeping on public property in Santa Monica?
Yeah, yeah. Santa Monica is one of the first probably 10 cities in the country to pass an anti-camping law, which is an absurd thing, because to apply a law against homeless people and call it a camping law is just absurd, because no homeless person, this isn't camping, this is survival. But that's part of the denial of too many officials and Americans that that's what we're engaged in.
Is there much violence against homeless people in Santa Monica in terms of either vigilante or police action? Have you got any stats on that, or any sense of whether that's increasing or decreasing in the last year or two?
Well, you know, the only way I can answer that is being homeless is violence. And I mean, that's the truthful answer to that. That's the real answer that we all know. And we shouldn't lose sight of that. But the answer about things like the hate attacks that were statistics on that that were compiled by the National Coalition for the Homeless. I think they found last year there were 80 homeless murders or violent attacks where people were like set on fire in homeless hate crimes. Here in Santa Monica, there's no compiling of statistics on homeless hate crimes against homeless people. While there are statistics compiled about hate crimes against other people, we have thankfully no major hate crime that we know of. That doesn't mean, even though we have a homeless newspaper in the city, that we know that we can say for a fact that that hasn't occurred, because, like in most communities, homeless papers are surviving by a handful of dedicated people, and we just don't get the facts on everything.
And the homeless newspaper you talk about making change, it was involved in some controversy 4 or 5 years ago when it was struggling against a what was perceived as competition locally, and perhaps even more ominously, a kind of a profound competition against homeless papers generally by the big issue, the London-based mega paper, which publishes every week and which is sold by homeless people in, I guess, 5 or 6 different large cities in the world. 3 of them in England, like 1 in South Africa, 1 in Australia, I'm not sure, but it's a worldwide paper with...
I think they're in the Netherlands, too.
The Netherlands now as well. You know, they're a paper which is... they've been characterized differently, and I haven't been following them in recent years in any detail. I don't subscribe to them. But they were considered in 1997, when I went to the meeting of NASNA, North American Street Newspaper Association, a group that was essentially using homeless people to distribute and sell a product that essentially kind of ripped off the homeless, but also had a certain, you know, it used a certain glitz or a patina of concern for homeless people, but also was more into, you know, mainstream frills and stuff, you know, in public interest stories about Princess Di and that sort of thing. Anyway, they had a problem with... We had a problem with them coming into the country because we were afraid they were going to, in essence, supplant local homeless papers that were struggling, and also some of us were concerned that advocacy was our interest, not, you know, putting together a product that homeless people could sell, like pens or, you know, pencils or apples on the corner, you know, where they get a small percentage of the money, but rather changing the situation through spreading the situation, spreading in news of the homeless struggle through print. And
Yeah, Robert, if...
I went on about that with some time, I apologize.
Yeah, but you explained the situation well, and to put it simply, for anybody who wants to understand some of the root causes of homelessness in America, and people are always saying, well, why are people homeless in America? Why are you homeless in America? The whole controversy over the big issue is worth looking into because it's a stark and egregious illustration of what causes homelessness in America. The big issue is a, quote, charity. And the question is, are charities solving homelessness in America, or are they perpetuating it? And if you look, and if you want to understand what homeless people say, will mean when they say that we don't want charity, we want justice, look at the big issue. The big issue is a global publishing empire being built on the backs of homeless slave labor. That's the fact. People, everybody understands today that you can own a multi-million dollar corporation that makes no money, but it's worth billions of dollars if you walk into a bank and you sell nothing more substantial than a name. And the big issue is a gigantic growing charity foundation.